Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
Red lights at the round table, green dots where we're able. We'll do routines to call the scenes, to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. Red lights at the round table, our shows are more mid-table. So many times we give them rhymes that are quite unsingable. We're off the mad in Camelot, we sing from the diaphragm alone.
I have to push the pram along.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Ma'am, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you ma'am.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how do you get that, eh?
By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
Well, that's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds, distributing swords, is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Hear ye, hear ye! King Shazeez the Terrible! All rise for King Shazeez the Terrible and the Knights of the Round Table!
If I were the devil, if I were the prince of darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness, and I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree, thee. So I'd set about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. and the old I would teach to pray after me, our Father, which art in Washington. And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions. Just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who wanted until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And what'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing. Paul Harvey.
We were out running errands yesterday, and everywhere we went, all anyone was talking about is how horrible modern society is these days. And Las Vegas. Las Vegas was on the TV in every waiting area that we saw, every corner that had a small TV in it that was on. It was talked about on every radio station, and even when we tried to change the channel, DJs were saying we should stop what we were doing and turn on the news to watch the coverage of Las Vegas. What we were told happened is a 64-year-old multimillionaire in real estate, for reasons no one knows that have not been explained, brought a cartoonish number of 23 guns into the Mandalay Bay Casino over the course of several days, and on Sunday night knocked out two windows on the 32nd floor. And despite being in a casino, which is a building with its own mini fusion center, in Las Vegas, which is the American equivalent of London in how many CCTV cameras it has, this man was somehow able to shoot down at a crowd of thousands of people attending a country music festival for over an hour, and no one was able to get into the room to stop him for 72 minutes. This is the same exact casino, by the way, that if the power even goes out, like it did for 40 minutes one day last year, security was able to put the entire place on full lockdown quickly within moments. And all day long, every news outlet, every channel, everything just repeated the same gory details over and over about the terror, the screaming, the running, and the blood, the blood, the blood. I must have heard that a brainwashing level number of times, which, if we're to believe that nearly 60 people died and over 500 were hurt, is really dehumanizing to any potential victims who may have been involved. Leftist outlets had sickos saying things like, conservative victims like those found at country music festivals don't deserve our sympathy. And far-right blowhards were attempting to push the ISIS homegrown lone wolf terror agenda. But the more that the details began to emerge on this, and there are some really strange things that have come out in the wake of this, the more we began asking ourselves, qui bono? Who benefits? Was there anyone waiting in the wings who benefits from such a senseless event? And as sick as it seems to say that, unfortunately, we live in a country and now a globally connected society that has been run on false flag terror and the Hegelian dialectic since at the very least World War II. At least. We have people in leadership positions like Rahm Emanuel saying things like, never let a good crisis go to waste.
You never want a serious crisis to go to waste. And what I mean by that, it's an opportunity to do things that you think you could not do before.
So when you see a bunch of red flag details start coming out that don't make any sense, and I mean no sense at all, and you start asking yourself, could this be a false flag? Always ask Ki Bono, and then work backwards from there. And of all the bizarre stuff coming out of Vegas, the minutiae of which we could debate all day long, one of the most compelling answers to our question was apparently posted on 4chan on, of all days, September 11th, just a few weeks ago. This is a thread called, If Anything Happens Tomorrow, It's Mossad False Flag Level Alpha. And I'm sure every single year on September 11th, you will see a post with the same warning or a similar warning, just by default, ever since 9/11, on this website. I'm just guessing. But this year, you had some pretty interesting and specific responses that make way too much sense. I was able to carbon date this page back to its creation date, and it was apparently created 23:59:59 on September 10th, 1 second before midnight, September 11th. So somebody had a message they definitely wanted to put out there. And down here in this thread is a post from John, I'm sure that's his real name. He says, look, I feel bad for some of you on this website, so I'll let you in on a little secret. If you live in Las Vegas or Henderson, stay inside tomorrow. Don't go anywhere where there are large groups of people. Also, if you see three black vans parked next to each other, immediately leave the area. You're welcome. And people started debating what that meant. And he comes back and says, it's called the High Incident Project. They want to make the American public think that places with extremely high security, like Las Vegas, aren't safe. They're trying to create more regulations. You'll see laws proposed in the next few years to put up more metal detectors and other security devices. Media and politicians will be saying places with lots of police need even more police. I can't guarantee anything will happen tomorrow, but Las Vegas is on their minds. Then he comes back one last time and says, if their plan is successful, state of Nevada will pass a law in the future making all casinos have mandatory metal detectors and backscatter machines. Soon after, a federal law will be passed to put these machines in universities, high schools, federal buildings, you name it. OSI Systems and Chertoff are the main producers of these machines. Sometime around 2020, Chertoff and OSI will merge into a single company. After they merge, the owners will sell off all their stock and make billions in profit. Mr. Chertoff has been in contact with Sheldon Adelson. Mr. Adelson will become a huge sponsor of these machines, and he will be the first to put them in his casinos when the law passes. This is my last message for now. Don't expect me to return anytime soon. If you will recall, back when the underwear bomber happened, Chertoff, who had been Department of Homeland Security Secretary from 2005 to 2009, by then he was running the Chertoff Group, which is a private security consulting agency. And after the underwear bomber happened, he came out and was a really big proponent, publicly promoting the Rapiscan naked body scanners, the backscatter x-ray machines that they put into all of the airports. He was pushing all of that, and then it came out that one of his main clients was OSI. OSI owns Rapiscan, the maker of the machines. OSI, by the way, being run by Deepak Chopra, not Oprah's Chopra, another guy with the same name, who is considered a quote-unquote significant donor to the Democratic Party to the point that he was able to accompany President Obama on a trip to India in 2010 to promote trade between India and the U.S. That's the level that that guy is. So you have a lot of big players involved in OSI, Rapiscan, of course, the Chertoff Group. On top of that, James Murin, the CEO of MGM International, which owns the Mandalay Bay Casino, also just so happens to be a sitting member of the Department of Homeland Security's National Infrastructure Advisory Council. And he actually sits on a group called the Critical Infrastructure Security and Resilience Research and Development Working Group, and they write reports like this one, where they talk about things that they can do to help get legislation passed and regulations to put in security technology infrastructure, such as, oh, I don't know, X-ray backscatter machines, into places, how to make that affordable for shareholders, which would be the people who own casinos who would have to buy and purchase these machines, and also they consider things like public acceptance of such technologies. That's the kind of stuff they talk about in their meetings as a member of the Homeland Security National Infrastructure Advisory Council, just so happens to be the same guy who is the CEO of the company that owns the hotel where this happened.
So all this was predicted, and it's eerie, and what makes sense about it is the president has these people as his peers. He's got a tower over there on Vegas Strip. He's met with these people publicly and privately. He knows all these casino owners. And Sheldon Adelson in particular sponsored the Las Vegas debate in the last GOP debate cycle.
The day before the debate, Trump met with Adelson at his hotel where the debate was being held.
Met privately with most, if not all, of the candidates on stage as they basically begged for his money and backing as one of the biggest kingmakers in the Republican Party. And Trump also met with them, and that night at the debate, while we don't know exactly what they said, that night at the debate, all the candidates hopped to see who could be the biggest and boldest at talking about counter-security measures, how they would take on terrorism, whether or not they would launch new wars to defend the country, and other related matters. And Trump came out very strongly that night for an anti-terrorism administration that picks up right where George Bush left off. And you've got Sheldon Adelson quietly, you know, with his cloaked hands, glad that they took this script. So the fact that you're now seeing a possible false flag incident and new security measures starting on the Las Vegas Strip pretty much echoes what happened in the debate and the connections that are there.
What's even, I think, creepier about it is after a mass shooting in this country, you always have calls for gun control. We're seeing that, but not to the same degree we normally do. Actually, what we're seeing this time is a lot of talk in every mainstream news outlet about how vulnerable hotel security is everywhere. So here's one from the New York Times about the Las Vegas shooting underscores hotel security choices. Here's one from Fox News about how hotels take new look at security after Las Vegas, but will customers sacrifice their privacy? And it just goes on and on. And every single one of these articles, they quote the same guy. It's this guy, Jim Stover, and he says, the hospitality industry hasn't gotten its act together in terms of anti-terrorism. It's not going to be pushed. It has to be pulled. It's not going to be pushed. It has to be pulled. All over the place, they're saying this. You even had an op-ed in the Huffington Post where a lady straight up said, do U.S. hotels need metal detectors? And it shows a picture of the backscatter x-rays, the naked body scanners. And she goes through and makes this argument, and it's a terrible argument. She says things like, metal detectors and security screening are routine at the entrances to hotels in many countries, such as Egypt and Jordan. Yes, because we need to start setting our sights on making America more like the Middle East, right? But it only takes 30 seconds longer than walking through a revolving door. And we all adjusted to the security screenings at U.S. airports, although we may grumble from time to time if the lines are long and we're racing to catch a plane. But TSA security screenings have become part of the experience of flying in the U.S., so we might as well accept this too. That's what she's saying. Perhaps it's time to make it safer to stay at a hotel in the U.S. by installing metal detectors and x-ray machines in hotel lobbies. But you know, just like with the airports, it's not going to stop there. In fact, the controversy over backscatter machines went up a notch when people started questioning the health and safety of such machines, and they ended up having to take a bunch of them out of the airports. And those machines are just sitting around waiting for someone to use them. So why not get all the hotels and casinos on board to stick them right in? And what do you know? But just the very next day, they're now reporting in Bloomberg that guests at the Wynn are being scanned in a glimpse of Las Vegas' future. That is how fast this has already begun. Because, again, the guy brought a cartoonish number of guns, supposedly 23 guns, into his room. More guns than he would possibly need. It's just over the top. The whole thing is over the top. And this is going to be the solution. Less freedom. Do you want to know how blatantly, transparently obvious this agenda is? The next day, former Homeland Security official Chad Sweet, who just so happens to also be the co-founder and CEO of the Chertoff Group, went on CNBC, and not only did he say that in a free society, there are no ways to eliminate security risks.
In a free society, there's no way to eliminate this kind of risk.
So what he really means is we need to be less free if we want to be safe. We need to give up our liberty for temporary security. He was also pushing, guess what?
But there are ways, as you said, to potentially mitigate the risk. In addition to intelligence sharing, you can also do a number of steps to establish a secure perimeter using various types of screening technology.
That's right, the X-ray technologies. Already, not even 24 hours later. So I guess the guy in the 4chan group just so happens to have had a crystal ball. That is what I call eerily prescient.
I guess some people don't remember. I remember it like it's yesterday. This is all the stuff they were building up to. They were telling us Homeland Security was going to be pre-screening passengers, every train, every plane, and eventually every car as well. They had mobile X-ray scanners deployed in the streets. They've got extremely sophisticated, potentially dangerous, very expensive equipment being rolled out everywhere, but the public was fed up with it. Hence, the Obama administration focused on the gun control side of the issue for years. Now that the administrations are back to Republican, here we go again with all these security measures, and better look closely at what's happening. Not everything is what it appears to be.
So, that's what happened. Now, whether that's a false flag of somebody posting that on September 11th as a little ha-ha gotcha game, I don't know. But the fact is, it makes way too much sense. Hey, maybe Trump will be the first one to put it in at his hotel. Why not? Because this is what they're getting ready. They're already pushing. It's been literally a day, and they are already scanning people. They're already doing this. And like the poster said, this is just going to be the beginning. Because to get us to the fully automated Minority Report level of society that we're supposed to be living in the future, there's going to have to be backscatter machines and all kinds of technology everywhere. That's the only way to get us there. But they know that they can't just institute it and put it in. They have to socially engineer everybody to accept it. And one way they can do that is false flag terror. That is how they get people to accept more and more intrusion and encroachment on their privacy and on their person. And that is why every time one of these events happens, you have to ask, who stands to benefit? And there are some people in some very high places who stand to make an awful lot of money off of taking away a little bit more of our freedom. Meanwhile, these machines have been debunked already. There are people that have done videos all over YouTube. They can sneak all kinds of things past these machines. I don't know about you, but I don't want to live in a society where I have to be X-rayed every time I want to go into the grocery store and get broccoli. Every time I leave my house, everywhere I go. That's not freedom. That's not even humane. But that's the reality they're trying to push here. Where are they going to stop once they start doing this? Where does it...
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, watch that sound. Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. thousand people in the street, singing songs and a carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Paranoia strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away, we better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop.
Hello everybody, you're listening to the Knights of the Round Table at www.shazoozradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html where you have access to not one but three separate chat rooms. Woohoo! Alright, so it's a crazy world and going to be a crazy show. Going to go from one extreme to the next. You just got through hearing that particular podcast. And because I didn't have an opportunity to try to download this second little gizmo here, I think I'm just going to go ahead and try something crazy and see if I can play it from one computer to the next and see if y'all can hear it good and all that kind of jazz. So either way, let's get into that. But before I do that, we got a page that Stephen Gibbons has been working on that as soon as he's ready, we're going to post it out there for everybody. It's a resource page here on Shazoo's Radio that has a bunch of links to all kinds of alternative energy researchers and websites and stuff like that. And man, he's got a lot of information posted on there. I can't wait for y'all to be able to check it out. But in the meantime, thank you, Stephen Gibbons, for all your hard work on that. That's just really amazing. So with that said, the world's pretty strange out there, and truth sometimes is stranger than fiction. So that's why I want to play this next deal and give you something to think about. And I'm going to go ahead and push play and see what happens here. I have to watch all the deals to see how this is going to play out.
Hi, everyone. So can I just say thank you to Age of Disclosure, who shared one of my videos yesterday. The last I looked at, I had over 6,000 views in just a day, which was incredible. Like, that is more than I would ever thought I'd have watching my videos. So this video is just, it's going to be piecing a lot of what I talk about together. So in the last video, I said that I believe that every rock, every stone, is all from something living. So here we have all these beautiful coloured stones and rocks, and I absolutely believe every single one of these has come from something that was once alive. These are obviously very small creatures, whatever these were, but how many millions, billions of creatures have been on our been alive, you know, for hundreds of thousands of years? This is absolutely more than possible for this to happen. So all around the world is these incredible, incredible places, and they're just not known about by the public, by the collective. We seem to know only the bits that are locally around us and not the whole world. And that's the power of the internet, because all around the world people can post pictures of all these incredible places all around the world, and everybody can know about it. And that's why I'm doing these videos as well, because this deserves to be known by everyone, okay? And by making videos, you start hearing all these tales from local villages and towns, and it just becomes something totally, totally incredible. So all these pictures that you're seeing right here, all of them have come from something that was once alive. I'm absolutely convinced by that. You just cannot tell me any other theory. Now, I don't believe in billions of years of evolution of the planet, and this was at the bottom of the ocean floor once upon a time, or a million other theories that are going around. I just don't believe any of it. I believe a flood was real in the Bible. It talks about a flood. I believe that happened. But other than that, I think everything is from something that was once alive. So, I'm just going to point out here these hexagonal columns, because I found out something really incredible this morning. I was looking at one of the photos and I was blown away. So I'm going to show you that in a minute. But all these formations around the world are absolutely no accident. This here is just, this is blood. Like, that is dried blood. And it's just, if you were to look at the chemical makeup of that, it's the exact same as blood. So yeah, so we're going to just, I'm just going to dive straight in. So we've got Turtle Rock, Toad Rock, Dragon Rock, this is Isle of Man, Dragon's Rock again. So to me, I'm seeing wings here. It's, not sure what to call that go down my neck actually, but this is a bit of head. Is it things or something? But yeah, Dragon's Rock in Crete, Dragon's Head in Australia, Dragon's Head, not sure where this one is, Australia again, this is the White Desert in Egypt. Again, these are just absolutely incredible. You can't deny that these are dragons. I mean, if we just go back to this one here, you can see blood stains. This is like the neck bone. It looks like his head's just been chopped off. It's just insane. But yeah, these formations are absolutely undeniable. This one here is absolutely undeniable. How can you deny that? It's incredible. Okay, so this is where I get a little bit excited after what I've seen today, because it's just proof in the pudding. So this is Giant's Causeway in Ireland. As you know, there's the big theory, the big bollocks theory, that these incredible columns have come from volcanic activity. This is dried volcano ash. Yeah, okay. Absolutely bull. So again, this is Fingal's Cave in Scotland. So you've got all these incredible hexagonal columns, incredible formations. Now this is volcanic molten lava. This is volcanic. This is what it looks like when it dries. Okay? Absolutely nothing. That is nothing like a hexagonal column. Like, where do they even, like, how does that look like that? Do you know? This is volcanic. This was something that was once alive. Massive, massive, massive difference. Okay, and this is where I got a little bit excited earlier on. So, I'm going to see if I can zoom in on this. So, clearly this is Elephant's Rock. Very, 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 you just can't even deny that. Now, what can you see all here? And all here. And all here. Uh-huh. Hexagonal columns. You can't even deny that. I've seen this photo 100 times and I've only just this morning noticed this, and it was just because the picture was more clearer, I guess. But look, so they're absolutely everywhere. Hexagonal columns all over this thing. It's incredible. It was alive. And that is clearly an elephant. You just can't even deny what that is. And all these rocks that look exactly like they are all called after exactly what they look like they are. It's not Elephant's Rock by mistake, it was an elephant. It's not Turtle's Rock by mistake, it was a turtle. And these columns are all from something that was once alive. And it's just, I couldn't believe it. I can't believe I'd noticed this before. It's all over this elephant, all these hexagonal columns. Yeah, eat your heart out right there. Proper in geek style right now, I'm so happy. So here is Devil's Tower in America. So if you haven't seen the No Forest on Flat Earth, I absolutely recommend watching that documentary. That is what woke me up, I think it was about 6, 7, 8 months ago now, I'm not quite sure. But I was absolutely blown away. absolutely blown away. I've never heard anything like it, but it completely resonated with me. I thought it was incredible. And then I got really, really angry because I understood what was actually going on with the Earth and what was happening to the Earth. But in the documentary and a lot of other videos that I've been watching, it actually says that Devil's Tower is an ancient tree stump. Now, Roger Spear on Mud Fossils has actually gone in and said that he believes this was something that was once alive, which I was open to, but after seeing this elephant, that is complete, you just can't even deny that these hexagonal columns are all over this thing. I can't deny that that is the exact same thing. And I can see that they were giant tree stumps, but I don't think this is one of them. I think this is legit alive. So again, these are all hexagonals right here. And these are hexagonals. So I'm not convinced that these are tree stumps. I think these was alive. If you see these, they're absolutely alive. But things like this is very interesting. I absolutely believe they were giant silicon trees, by the way. But again, they are quoted everywhere throughout myths and legends. The Bible talks of giant trees. I don't think there was a lot of them, from what I'm understanding. I think there were a very few sacred amounts. Venezuela seems very, very populated with these. But by populated, I mean maybe like 10 or 20 that had a network. But I do believe giants were vastly outnumbered. They outnumbered these silicon trees vastly. I think there were hundreds of thousands of giants and just a handful of these giant trees. So again, here I'm seeing and I'm believing these to be more of a giant tree than Devil's Tower. Again, here, this seems to be more than the giant tree to me. So yeah, I'll be here. And I absolutely believe this, by the way. Honestly, if you haven't seen that documentary, then that's why it's on Flat Earth. You just need to watch it. It's incredible. And it's got this little Avatar feel to it. And when you watch Avatar, like, I'm such a tribe person. I really believe in having a tribe and a community and like being so in tune with yourselves and each other and the planet, the earth that you're on, the ground that you're on. And they have this massive connection to the trees, the animals. And I believe we possibly could have been like that. And it's just all being destroyed. So in the Bible, it talks about this incredible tree. We've got the tree of life, the tree of knowledge. And then in other myths and legends, talk about giant trees. And I absolutely believe this. I think the world was full of giants and trees and things that we can't even get our head around. But again, there were giants. There was everything. They were all there. This is the sleeping giant of Kaz. Like I said in my last video, you cannot even deny this. There's a house right there. And this is just like the upper part of his body. It's just incredible. You just can't deny what that is. The sleeping giant mountain. If you actually Google sleeping giant mountain, you're going to come up across with many, 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 many. So again, yeah, somebody's figured this out. And all these giants fell to the ground and they've decayed over time, fossilized, whatever, and we've started to build on top of them. The very grounds we're walking on is absolutely made by giants and living creatures, absolutely. So again, another one there. There is literally hundreds of these all around the world. There's some called Sleeping Beauty, there's some called Sleeping Giants, and the statues. So I honestly believe that a lot of these statues, especially the older ones, were legit real. I think these are actual real people that have somehow been morphed and densified or metamorphosized into stone. I absolutely believe it. I'm not saying every single statue, but I'm saying a lot of them, especially the older ones, absolutely were. And again here, you see that half man, half horse. This old world is completely different. Our Holy Spirit is completely different to what you have ever been told. And art, this incredible famous art that is all around the world, these incredible famous statues all around the world, myths and legends, the Bible, all these incredible, incredible places verify that all this is true, or they're telling you that it was true. Absolutely true. Half God, half man. Half goat, half man. Looks like he's got not going to be in Japan, actually. So what I'm getting out of this video is that all the myths, all the legends that you've ever heard are not fairy tale childish myths, okay? They are the real deal. Dragons, giants, mythical creatures, giant silicone trees, the flood, all of them absolutely happened, and the proof is everywhere. And I'm encouraging you, if this is inspiring you, if this is resonating with you, if it's making you excited, if it's making you go, what the fuffer? I'm trying not to play. Then I honestly encourage you to look into this, because it is incredible. Absolutely incredible. It all seems to be designed, in my opinion, to take us away from a creator. And, you know, to me personally, it was a massive, massive bump in the heart when I realised that the Flat Earth had a lot of good points behind it. Or it made a lot more sense than what we're told about the Earth and the universe. Because I was so in love with the universe. I absolutely loved the stars and stuff. I loved sitting outside at night and thinking just how tiny we were compared to this massive universe. That was the point we're constantly expanding, and I could never get my head around it. It never ever made sense, but it was fascinating to me. So when I found out about the Flat Earth, and then the trees, and then the giant, and the mud fossils, it honestly was... it just makes you realise that literally every single thing we are told is a lie. Every single thing. And it really does feel to me now, knowing it all and looking back, it's to take us away from a creator. Because I didn't believe in God, I didn't believe in any of it. I just thought, we're all an accident, it all happened through evolution and the Big Bang and all this stuff. But I wasn't religious, and I'm not religious now, but I am starting to believe in a creator. And I think that is the whole reason why we are just lied to. So the real question for me now is not if all these things were real. It's undeniable to me that they were. The question is, what we're going to do now? What we're going to do with this information? Are we going to carry on having children and going to school and being just told the lies the whole childhood? And then they have to go through the whole process of having to find out that the whole life was just a big fat lie? Or are we going to start telling children, look, this is the truth? Are we going to ask teachers to not blindly follow authority and what they've been told and actually look into these things themselves? Are we actually going to ask the whole world to say, come on, look into this, you need to be understanding this, because we can't carry on with these lies. It's got to stop. So I'm absolutely blown away with our world. I was looking at some pictures earlier on, and they're just so beautiful. This world is incredible, and let's look after it. Okay, let's look after each other. Truth is our birthright. Every single person's birthright. And let's just demand no more lies. Stop lying to us. Hope you enjoyed the video, everyone. Thank you.
A wing, a wet, a wing, a wet, a wing, a wet, a wing, a wet. Shazam the Terrible and the Knights of the Round Table.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html. It's going to be a crazy show. It's also a crazy world. See, I've come to this conclusion that I don't really exist. I'm not really here. I'm just a voice shouting in the shout box of the Matrix out to the world, trying to wake people up to whatever reality is. And so with that said, I played a couple podcasts, one of which was talking about some strange happenings over there at Mandalay Bay in Las Vegas and possible conspiracies behind the scenes to get things basically put into place for security, you know, x-ray machines, kind of like whenever you go to the airport and get groped or whatever by the TSA. And you know, Thomas Jefferson said the price to freedom was eternal vigilance, and I think also the same person made the same another quote that said that those who would give up freedom for security deserve neither. Anyway, so that's the kind of world we live in, where essentially around the corner of every single curve or underneath every single bed or in the closet is a boogeyman that's going to jump out and get you. And so that keeps the world on its toes, so to speak. You know, there's all kinds of things going on, and the average Joe out there so wrapped up in life and things that are happening in the world that, you know, it's just kind of hard to get a grip on what the truth is. You know, reality, that sometimes they say, is stranger than fiction. That's why I played the second podcast around there that pretty much said that if you look at out there at all these different rock formations of the world, and like, for example, I think it's called a Devil's Tower or something like that in the United States. It's a big old deal. It's actually in the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind. The UFOs were landing on top of this thing. Well, anyway, when you look at this thing first, they tell you it's because of a volcanic deal that this formation occurred or whatever. But then whenever somebody put the bug in somebody's ear and said, hey, look at that, that's not what you think it is. That's a tree trunk. Looked like somebody had cut off a tree at some point in time. And then you step back and you look at it and you're like, wow, that really does look like a tree stump. And then when you get taken a closer look at it, the tree stump, I mean, it really looks like it's got fibers in it and stuff. And when the lady in the podcast was matching it up to what volcanic lava really looks like, there is absolutely no comparison. It really looks like that was at one point in time alive. However, that if that tree was really alive at one time, the man or men who cut that tree down must have been huge. I mean, the tree itself probably, comparing the size of the trunk, must have been at least 6 miles tall. I'll pause for a second, let you contemplate on a tree that is 6 miles tall. That sounds impossible. And even the thought of giants on the land sounds impossible to us, because, I mean, look at the size of us. I mean, some of us are 6 foot, and some of us are close to 7 foot. I mean, you got some pretty tall basketball players, and you got some pretty short people too as well. So you kind of look at the short people like, I'm not going to use any of the terminology they use for short people, but some of them are looking up at a 6 foot tall man would think, you know, a lot of the dude's a giant, right? And I've been in cultures before where the majority of the people are kind of shorter than I am, and it's kind of like walking in the sea of people, and I kind of felt like a giant when I was standing over in Japan, you know, back in the 80s. So, you know, you could kind of visualize what it would be like to be a giant. But for a man to be able to cut down a tree that would be 6 miles tall, that would have to be one pretty good-sized dude. And so, with that said, then there's also the case of the tree falling. That means that tree is 6 miles tall. Somebody within a 6 mile area better hear the whole shout of timber, you know, otherwise, so they can get out of the way, because a 6 mile tall tree has probably got a pretty good expanse on the top that probably flatten a few things on the way down anyway. So anyway, the story keeps on going on from there. It's not just that the tree was 6 miles tall. It also goes back to, it actually had some biblical reference where they talked about in the days of Noah, there were giants in them days and dragons and all kinds of stuff. So I'm like, you know, if this tree was 6 miles tall and there was a giant big enough to cut that down, that would kind of be like confirmation to whatever was written in that book at one point in time. Now, I'm not saying anything at this point in time, but what I'm trying to say to you is to keep your eyes and your mind wide open to any kind of possibility, because in this world today, finding the truth is like trying to find a needle in a haystack. It's trying to find something that somebody, for some purpose, whether it be control or financial gain or whatever, wants to hide the truth from everybody who's out there. So if you look around and you watch this video, on which I posted both of these videos, the one about Mandalay Bay and the body scanners and x-ray machines and stuff that they want to put in motels and stores and stuff like that, you know, to basically scan you to make sure you ain't got no weapons and all that. Somebody stands to gain a lot of money on that. And I also put the one in there where it talks about that the rocks were actually alive at some point in time. One of the pictures that she showed in there was pretty amazing to me, was all these colored rocks, and they were beautiful. I mean, every color in the rainbow you could possibly imagine. They were really beautiful. The picture that kind of got me the most was looking at this stone that looked just like an elephant. All right, now, if you look up in the clouds, you can find shapes in the clouds and things, you know, and you know, get a, you know, some sort of imagination going on where it looks like there's, you know, maybe an elephant in the clouds. But looking at this stone and knowing what a real elephant looks like and the crinkles in the trunk and that kind of stuff, and looking at this stone and the eye sockets of the elephant, it really honestly looks like at one point in time that was a real live elephant. Then at some point in time, if there was a biblical flood, like many cultures believe that there was a huge, massive worldwide flood at some point in history, then all of these things would have died. You know, they would have died right there and potentially fossilized over the years to the point where now they look like stones. And then, you know, the story gets even wilder than that. If you actually go back in history and you look at some of the statues that supposed artists in the world had created, and some of these statues, they don't even know who made the statue. But the statue itself is so meticulous in the detail that you would swear that these people must have took and put somebody in a mold and formed down to the very muscle levels and all the creases and crevices of somebody's body that made this person look so realistic, but out of stone. So somebody had some really good talent to be able to put these statues together that actually look realistic in detail, and they were, you know, just amazing. So, if you look into Greek mythology, you'll find that there are titans, and there like one of the titans was Medusa. Medusa, her power was that she was so hideous looking that if you looked at her, you would turn to stone instantly. Well, that kind of makes you think there for a second. If these statues were indeed stones that were alive at one point in time, maybe, just possibly, that there could have been a creature such as Medusa that would be alive. See, now the biblical reference said that in those days that the pollen had come down and mated with the women of the earth and basically created abominations to God, you know, like Medusa would be, or Pan, you know, half goat, half man, and that kind of stuff like that. And so, you know, the giants and, you know, in conspiracy world, you'll hear the word Nephilim, you know, that kind of stuff. But nonetheless, think about this for a second. Even if you're a giant and you look upon Medusa, and you could get turned to stone. If you're just a regular average Joe, average size, and you looked upon Medusa, you could get turned to stone. Now, am I saying that Medusa really exists or that these people were really alive at one time? No, but what I am saying is that the possibility is so incredibly, I don't know what the word I'm looking for. The evidence looks pretty strong that these people could have literally been alive. I mean, unless the artist himself was so meticulous and so incredible that he was able to literally carve out exactly the likeness of any human there and do this many times over. It's pretty amazing. And so, you know, through all the different cultures and all the different lands, you'll find all kinds of different places where it looks like a mountain range is literally a giant laying down, sleeping giants. And you'll find statues that look so incredibly realistic. And even she showed pictures in there of dragons that were, rocks that were looked like dragons. But if you're standing back at a distance and you're really looking at this thing, I mean, it seriously looks like it could have been a dragon. So, you have to think now. If our history has been told one way, and we were convinced that this world, this reality of ours is another way, there would have to be some sort of purpose, some sort of reasoning behind why they wouldn't want us to know that at one time in history there really was giants walking the land. You know, there's all kinds of pictures out there that you can Google up on YouTube, and the Smithsonian Institute always keeps coming up into the picture where they're people had found these giant skeletons, and they were standing there, and they took pictures of them. And it's not just that there was one picture out there, it's the quantity of the pictures, older pictures, that people had taken, that I'm thinking that why would there be so many different people that would want to fake so many different pictures to show that they're standing next to a giant, and where did these skeletons end up if they were discovered? Once again, the Smithsonian Institute always keeps coming up that they get these things, they hide them, and then you have conspiracies about the Vatican hiding information from the past and such like that. Well, in our world, we know that knowledge is power. What you know is basically your power. You know, what you don't know could very well be that gives you the problems, if you understand what I'm trying to say here. So, if indeed there were giants on the land, and if indeed the biblical stories were true, that would be something that if somebody didn't want you to think about the possibilities of a creator, then they wouldn't want you to know that kind of stuff. And it even goes down to the shape of our Earth, whether our Earth is a huge, never-ending flat plane, or whether it's a sphere in space like science says, and then we have all these planets out there, or all this kind of stuff. Could very well possibly be that none of what we really think of reality is reality, and that we live in literally a magical world. A magical world, because see, it talks about in the Bible, it talks about we don't fight against flesh and blood. We fight against basically a spiritual power, you know, something that we don't really necessarily understand. Maybe at some point in time, people did understand that. They understand there might have been wizards and witches and all kinds of stuff, you know. There might have been dragons, and there might have been all those stories that you heard when you was a kid. There might have been really on this land. Now, if you look out there and you to think about that tree that I was talking about, the one they call Devil's Mountain or Devil's Ridge or something like that, and you look at that tree and you think...
Devil's Tower.
Devil's Tower, that's it. And you look at that, and you contemplate on how big somebody would have had to been to cut that tree down. That's mind-blowing. And then when you get to looking at that actual structure of that, and then you hear the scientific explanation of how that actually came to pass, it doesn't add up. It was quite a while back, but I had seen a video, and I can't even remember the guy's name. The guy was, he studied, I believe it's called botany for plants or whatever, and he was out there on a tour or something at this same exact spot, and he was looking at it, and he was telling people, look, that's not a mountain. Those aren't volcanic deals. That was a tree. That's literally a tree stump. And, of course, now he took this from a scientific point of view and an education of plants. I found in just my area, a creek, I found a fossilized piece of wood, petrified wood. And I've actually got a couple pieces of petrified wood around here, one of which somebody brought from somewhere else. Now, if you look underneath the magnifying glass at petrified wood, you can actually see the fibers of it, and you can see the crystalline structures that are formed after these things actually petrify, and they're pretty amazing. And one would have to think of how that, how long that would have took to petrify, and of course science says that it was millions of years that it could have petrified, but there's been a lot of research prior to that that said that no, it don't take that long to petrify. A whole lot of pressure and different stuff like that can cause things to crystallize just away. So essentially, the pressure of all the water that could have been in a literal biblical flood could have been enough to cause things to petrify. If you can think about it, if you've ever looked at a flood zone, and you see all the silt that is washed in with all the water and it all settles down, everything fits like a glove whenever you look at a possible giant laying on his side covered by partially by dirt, or you know, things being pressured so much that they actually literally begin to petrify. So it makes you wonder. You know, these things that I'm talking about, they seem so far out of the realm of reality because we've been told differently of what the world really is. And as I'm looking around me, and I'm really amazed at the world anyway. And I had mentioned a time back when it would be really interesting to see what this world would have been like on the very first day of creation, as I believe it. And it must have been the most beautiful thing in the world. And if there was a tree, like a tree of life, that was standing somewhere here in the United States that was 6 foot or 6 miles tall, and then there was actually a man big enough to cut that tree down, that's mind-blowing to me. And maybe that tree wasn't even intended on being cut down. Maybe that was one of the things that made the Creator mad. Look, don't you cut that tree down and then cut it down anyway, you know. Use it for firewood or whatever.
Hey, you're amazing.
So, you know, I'm saying to the world out there, I'm hollering in this shout box that we call the internet. I'm out here, I don't even exist. I'm just a voice in the background of the Matrix, and I'm hollering out, hey, look around. Things just may not be exactly what you think they are. You know, these, they call them false flags. Some call them, you know, there's other terminology in the conspiracy world that, you know, governments use things, and it's not necessarily just all and all out government. It could be, you know, corrupt factions of the government. You know, it ain't like conspiracies don't exist, because if you go back through history, men have been conspiring with other men to do rotten things all the time. And the whole ultimate goal for all of us is to find the real truth of our existence. Everybody who's ever been alive probably thought about at some point in time when they were kids, where did I come from? Why am I here? You know, what makes the sky blue? Why does this work? How does that work? And we all want to know all these mysteries. But when I saw this video for the first time, I was stuck kind of in the thought of, you know, oh, well, you know, it's really interesting and everything, but, you know, it just don't look that all scientific to me until I seen the face of that elephant. When I look and see that face of that elephant in a rock, either somebody was a really good artist and carved that rock to be specific to what the elephant really looked like, and I'm looking at it at a scientific view, and she's actually zooming in and showing you that there are shapes, geometrical shapes in this rock that basically look like fibers that you would see under a microscope of flesh, of animal flesh or even human flesh. And so, you know, he's got you wondering. And am I saying the earth is flat? No, I'm saying the earth is flat. I ain't saying it's round. I don't freaking know. How could I know? Literally. Unless I could get high enough up in the air or far enough back to see the big picture, I'm only at the mercy of the information that people are putting out to me. And it's not just the education system that gives me information. It's you. It's the people that I come in contact, the voices, other voices from the internet that tell me that things are different than what you were taught. If my whole life has been a lie, then maybe I don't even really exist. Maybe I'm just a blip on the screen, you know? I'm just a speck out there in the matrix that, like I said...
Hey, relax, okay?
Relax?
Yeah.
I'm having a good time.
No, yes, you are.
So, maybe I'm just a voice shouting down into the matrix saying, look around. See, because I like to step back and look at the big picture. I like to see the truth as it should be. The truth the truth may sometimes not be what you want to hear, but sometimes the truth is what you need to hear. And so I want to know what's going on in this world. If we elect representation to go out there to basically keep order, you know, that's the only reason why we even really got a government. It's supposedly for our protection and to keep order and to make sure that things just don't get out of control. But in the process, those who are at the top, if they're not being truthful to the history of our past, the reality of our world, you have to ask why? Who benefits from lying to the world and saying that giants never existed in the world, or that somebody in a different state than where I'm living shot up 500 people and 59 of them died, you know? Am I saying that none of that happened? I don't know. How could I know? Unless I'm actually standing on the scene and see for my own two eyes, physically, I'm standing there watching what's going on, how could I know? I only got the information that the world has presented to me. It's not just, like I said, it's not just the mainstream media. It's not just what I've researched on the internet. It's you, it's everybody. It's everybody who's told me their view of what they've seen in this world. And so, sometimes you look out there and you see all the wonders that are. And you think of how amazing it all is. Looking out into the stars, and even on the scientific point of the view where it talks about there are trillions and trillions of stars out there, and space is infinite, ever expanding. And at some point in time, it all came from one little speck, you know, one big bang that pow, suddenly everything was scattered across all that is, and we got all this amazement, and somewhere on another one of these rocks out there in space might be another person. It's pretty amazing. You know, however it came to pass, it's pretty amazing. But here on the Knights of the Round Table, we're not just here trying to find solutions. We're here trying to find the truth of our reality. And so what we do is we go out there and we find other people, and they look at stuff and we look at stuff and we discuss it and we try to figure out what it's all about. But it seems like the curtain, the veil has been peeled back, and things that were at one point in time fairy tales, or one time point in time science fiction, or even conspiratorial, the truths are coming out. They're coming out at an alarming rate. And, you know, there was a guy in one of the shows out there, I can't remember which show it was, but he said that you can't handle the truth. Well, I can handle the truth. And I'm tired of being lied to. So, Raymond, how's it going, brother?
I can't handle the truth. The truth is, I'm standing on top of this mountain watching all these dumb pieces of crap hurting themselves because they watch people that are professionals set themselves on fire. And they're running around screaming and hollering because that's what sells the movie. And the dumb kids are setting themselves on fire without knowing what they're doing.
Well, that's another part of the whole deal. Some of the information.
Oh, hey. I once heard someone say, the heck with it. Kill them all and let God sort them out.
Yeah, but I'm not into that, man.
I'm not into it either. But at the same time, think about it. It's a truth. It is a truth. In the movies, they shoot somebody. Blood flies everywhere. And he gets up and he kills all the bad guys and then he dies. Come on.
Yeah, well, see, we're into peace and love and the possibility for redemption and saving the world kind of thing, man.
Right.
You know, see, these folks out here, when you see all this information, like you just mentioned somebody setting themselves on fire, that idea had to come from somewhere. Somebody had to into their head that was something good. Well,
right.
So basically what I'm trying to say here, if you try to step back like we do here on the Knights of the Round Table, and you really try to look at the big picture and see what's really going on out there in the world, most people don't do that. Most people are in a little zone of their own, a little bubble, so to speak, and they only know the reality and the truths that seep into their little bubble, and so they form these crazy ideas of what, you know, is life, and that's not necessarily the truth, if you understand what I'm trying to say.
I understand.
And so, while they're in there, and they get so hopeless because they're in this bubble, and it's like, oh, you know, what's the point? You know, I'll show them. I'll set myself on fire. You know, and they didn't show nobody because life went on anyway. You know?
Exactly. That's my point.
Yeah, you know? And if you look out there at what's going on, you know, you always have to ask who stands to gain for any purpose under the sun. If somebody has an agenda, they have a purpose. They got some sort of reason why they want to convince you of something. Now, I'm not trying to convince the world of nothing other than that I want the world to literally take a step back and take a look around and see what is going on for yourself and put all that education aside. Put all the all the preconceived notions aside and just step back, observe everything, pay attention to detail, and see if things add up to what you were told. You see what I'm saying? Stephen Gibbons posted in the chat room, he said, impossible given the physics we understand today at the scale of the Earth as it is known. It would be possible if the expanding Earth theory was a my glasses are blurring up on me. Merit also doesn't explain fossils of dragons or dinosaurs we find today. With the why didn't they turn into mountains, etc. I'm more leaning towards these things such as elephants, rock being art from previous civilizations. See. I don't disagree with him. I honestly don't, because I don't know. All I can tell you is that when I'm personally observing what we see around here, it tells me at one point in time that things in this world that I was taught, you know, were just stone, may have very well been alive. It may have, you know, you hear the phrase Mother Earth all the time. Maybe this Earth really seriously is alive. Maybe these structures, maybe these things could have literally been giants on the land. I mean, there is biblical reference that says that in the days of Noah there were giants on the land. And so
wait a minute. There are physical evidence that at one time there were creatures really, really big, like dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Well, why couldn't there not be humans?
Well,
that were really, really big, that killed these and ate them.
Well, science. Come on.
Think about it. I mean, so you got all these pictures of little bitty people, tiny creatures, standing around all these big skeletons of human beings.
Yeah. Well, science...
Wait a minute. Think about it.
I am thinking about it, and I'm trying to respond to you. Science is provable that if you take a fish, and you put a fish in a fish bowl, the fish will stay small. But if you put the fish in a fish tank, the fish will get large. The fish will get as large as their environment. And if at one point in time there was a tree that was 6 miles tall, well, pause for a second, contemplate on a tree 6 miles tall. All right? 6 miles tall is a tall tree. And that means that at one point in time, our environment was so incredibly oxygen rich and healthy that the possibilities of somebody living 500 to 900 years or being that tall or whatever, it's not beyond the realms of science. That's all I'm saying. Hi, Barbara, how you doing? Are you with us?
Yeah. Oh, I just muted. I realized I was popping into your ears there. Sorry.
All right. I would like to introduce El Capitan.
El Capitan.
Yep.
Who's that?
Who? It's not a who, it's a what. Oh. It's a mountain.
Yeah.
In Nevada.
Oh, and El Capitan.
There are many, many stories about El Capitan. It's a tree stump.
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
Wait. The story goes that there were two sisters and a brother. And the brother played bear. And he chased his two sisters. Alright? So, all of a sudden, reality takes place and the boy turns into a real bear. And he's going to kill his two sisters. And God comes up and says, jump up on this tree stump and you will be saved. And the story goes, the two sisters believed in God, so they jumped up on the tree stump and the bear comes up and starts clawing at the tree stump trying to get to his two sisters, but he's not his brother, he's not their brother anymore, he's a real bear. So the tree stump starts to grow and lift the two young girls way up into the air. And the bear keeps crawling and clawing at the tree stump. And then when the tree stump got so tall, the bear could not possibly reach them anymore. The two girls were lifted into heaven. That is Mount El Capitan.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, supposedly.
It's a story.
I have to chime in on this because.
Okay, good. Thank you.
thank you for that story. It reminds me of. So the image of the claw marks. What you look at the photos of the Mato Tepila, which is the Lakota name for Bear Butte. Or Devil's Tower. Anything that has a word devil in it, you know that it was once something very sacred to the people.
Right.
You have Devil's Tower, you have Devil's Lake, you have Devil's Kitchen, you have Devil's Cove, all this stuff you know. Those places were once very sacred.
No joke, really. They were.
Yeah. So, but the people came, you know, from across the big waters and came here and landed and with their black book and had their perception, their way, and that was devilry, and these people were heathens, and they weren't Christians, and they didn't know for nothing about God or Creator, but it was so untrue. But anyway, the claw marks, it looks like claw marks, and that's one of the, well, they call them myths or stories or fairy tales, but they're really not. If you go back in history and you really study the messages from the ancestors, what they left us, there's a lot of truth, you know. It's just, but the people have to say, oh, this is just a cute story or just a myth. You know, it's part of the, like you were talking about earlier, the giants, you know. You can't have, there can't be giants in the world because that would mess up the whole plan.
Yeah. So they killed each other off.
Well, I sent in, I sent a link to the Smithsonian finally admits that they destroyed numerous, thousands, literally, of giant human skeletons in the early 1900s. So, you know, I mean, all the people, like the Indian people, our relatives, have all spoken about the giant race, as well as what we call the Wikchopi Oyate, the little people. You know, they're all over the world. These races existed, and all ancient people have their stories about them.
Well, the thing I was saying earlier about that was that, you know, if you look out on the internet, you'll find all kinds of faked pictures. But if you really seriously take a look at it, you'll find a lot of pictures from a lot of different areas of people standing next to what appears to be a giant skeleton. And so with that said, through the history of that picture and the number of pictures out there, you would think that somebody, that would have got somebody's attention. And to the extent where they started teaching people in school, look, we found this giant skeleton. I mean, that's not something you'd want to hide from the world, you'd think. You see what I mean?
Oh, I listen, if you had an agenda and you want to be the controllers of people's lives and people's minds and set the pace for history, you would.
Yeah, I'm telling the people, I come from a scientific background, because I paid attention in school. I paid attention in science. I love science, but, you know, I'm not going to allow science to blind me to what's more important to me personally is the truth. I want the truth of what, you know, whether, you know, you want to believe in a creator or God or not, that's your own personal choice. But to me, I want to get to the truth of all of what's going on as far as, you know, why we're here, what's our purpose, and...
All right, wait a minute. Logic. Logic says, okay, all rose bushes have thorns. This bush has thorns, therefore it is a rose bush, correct? Yes or no?
Well, there's a lot of thorn trees out there, a lot of thorn bushes.
Well, Did you apply logic? Did you listen to what I said? I said rose bushes have thorns.
Yeah.
This bush has thorns, therefore it is a rose bush. And you said, wait a minute. You applied logic. You applied logic. There's a lot of bushes that have thorns that don't have roses. Duh. Because this, you applied a little bit of logic to your science.
Well, that's what needs to be done. A little bit of common sense, some logic, and some honest perspective. I mean, if I go into an experiment with an agenda driven and I have a bias to my outcome, then I'm more than likely going to get the outcome that I want. And my research is going to present that outcome. Okay, this is...
But did you apply logic to it?
Not if I do it like that, but...
Well, question authority, that's the key.
Yeah.
That's all
right.
I say.
Okay.
Question authority, and I just want to add that, you know, if you have all those false giant skeletons all over the place, as you said, in different parts of the country and even in the world, there was a lot of people working with plaster casts all over the place. Boy, I'll tell you, what a job that would be.
And they were good artists, too.
That brings up Pompeii.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Right.
Really?
Well, tell me, what do you think?
Also, I mentioned earlier about some of the statues from back during Greek history time. Now, there must have been some really incredible sculptures, artists back in them days, because if you look at some of these statues, the detail is so incredibly meticulous. You have to ask the question. How could somebody literally carve their statues out there that they don't know who put together? You know, that they don't know who the original artists are. And if you also go back into Greek mythology, there is a character, one of the Titans, called Medusa, that was her power because she was so hideous looking that she literally turned people to stone if they looked at her. You think, well, is that plausible? I mean, maybe it is.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I don't know if you've studied the most recent, but maybe there's even more since then, but this 6,000-year-old temple they found, the Göbekli Tepe in Turkey, the oldest temple of the world, and you have to see these carvings, you know? So it even goes back further, way, you know, much further. They're finding civilizations that were, their expertise and their technology was beyond comprehension, and half the things they did then, they can't do today.
Well, yeah, Easter Island's one good example. Got those huge carvings of out of some pretty heavy stone, as far as I remember. You would have to be a pretty big dude to move that stone.
Well, you have to be a giant. And by the way, the expertise of the carving and the way they niche them in together, you can't even stick a piece of paper in there in between them. They're so precise and so well. And that's beyond today's, they're saying, I'm not saying the scientific world or whomever does this, who the authorities are that say, you know, that's, not easy or difficult, or we can't even do that today.
Well, truthfully, I don't think I like the authorities, because if they're not telling the truth...
Question authorities. Who are they?
The reason
we all say, they say, oh, they said, or they said, who are they?
That's what I'd like to know.
Who are they, anyway?
The reason why I compiled both of these two extremes together was because if you look at any of the false flags out there, or if you look at any of the history that had been changed and the realities that are presented to us, it's because we all are supposedly on this quest for truth. I want to know the truth, all right? And if somebody's out there trying to scare the world into submission, that's not the truth, all right? And if there was something that happened in the past that is relevant to our existence, and it's being covered up via the Smithsonian Institute or anybody else for that matter, then that's not the truth. If the Vatican's literally hiding the truth of past civilizations and information that could be relevant to bettering this world, you know, Raymond's always saying it. If you ignore the past, if you ignore history, you're bound to repeat it. He's always saying that. And so maybe we're on a road to the same kind of destruction that some of these prior civilizations had came down to, and maybe somebody, because they want to keep like continuity of government or their power structure or their gold on the other side of whatever said apocalypse could be, you know, on the way or whatever, there may not be any apocalypses. It may just be a whole bunch of, I'm going to scare the heck out of you and sell you a generator kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
Is that what
you're right?
Sell you a Well, you know, there's the story. Is it a myth? Is it the truth about you have two civilizations, Atlantis and Lemuria? So, supposedly, the myth goes, or story, or truth goes that Atlantis and Lemuria were completely, high civilizations, but one of them chose to live with a spiritual foundation, let's say, right? Right. And then the other one decided to move into high technology.
Right.
So what do you think happened to the one, well, it's supposedly Atlantis, and then who determined that they were going to become gods? Like, the technology, like some of the people who, like I'll remember listening to this scientist who was involved with CERN, and he said, we are going to be gods and you can't stop us. So that kind of attitude is going to get you in trouble. And where are we going with that? And then you have Lemuria, who's working in the spiritual, more in a spiritual foundation. So there's a big difference there. I'm all for technology, but I think technology is a gift from Creator, as is everything. But I also feel that we also come to a choice. We have a choice, free will. What are you going to do with this gift? Are you going to work with this for the betterment of all humanity and all creation, or are you going to take it and run with it and use it for destruction or chaos or whatever, right?
Well, I'm with you on that. The one thing that I want to point out is that, you know, there's this thing in technology called a singularity, you know, where essentially transhumanism starts and man and machine literally merge. And at that point, you know, when they're figuring they're going to literally become gods and live forever, they lost their humanity the moment they stepped into that machine, if you understand what I'm saying. I mean, what makes us human is the fact that we're, you know, like flesh and blood and literally the best machine ever put together. And now, because they want to take this, whatever they believe is inside on their spirit, their being, and merge it into a machine, now that machine isn't no longer human. You see what I'm saying here? But at some point, when does the machine take over and decide that we're no longer necessary because we got all these emotions and we don't always make the logical choice, if you understand what I'm trying to say?
Well, they're giving up the freedom, right?
Yeah.
Well, there are who are some are saying that this is going to happen. That you create a monster.
Yeah. It's like Pandora's box. Remember the story about that one?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, once you open it up.
I think it's been open.
Yeah. Once you open it up.
Before you can shut it, there's only one thing left in the box. What was that?
I don't remember.
You don't remember? Come on. You're quoting Greek and Roman mythology?
I am.
Okay. Then what was left? When the Pandora's box was opened, all this strife, all this pestilence, all these diseases came out and became real. And before she could shut the box, there was only one thing left in the box, and therefore, she could not shut the box. She had to let the last thing in the box out, what was left in the box.
Well, tell us. You got us on the edge of our seat.
Yeah, don't leave us hanging.
You need to study your Greek and Roman mythology.
Okay,
or maybe,
okay.
maybe, I need to tell the truth.
Yeah, maybe okay. You are one of those authorities that we need to listen to.
The last thing left in the box, and the only reason she did not shut the box is because of the last thing left in the box, and that was hope. Hope.
Well, in this world, I think we need a bit of that.
Yep, a little bit of hope. Sort it out. I mean, you know, it's a disease, but I hope he will or she will survive. If they don't, I'm going to cry a tear.
Well, did you know? Did you know?
I'm going on with my life. All right.
Did you know that Pandora's box originally was a jar, and it didn't become a box until the 16th century A.D.?
Okay. All right.
So we've been duped again.
Yep. I did my thesis on the parallels of Christianity.
Catholicism.
You're right. Thank you.
That word. And
the parallels between Greek and Roman mythology and Christianity and whatever, and they're all follow the same road. They just have different stories.
Well, then maybe, just maybe, and I'm just saying hypothetically, just
okay,
maybe,
good.
Because there are so many cultures in the world that have so many different parallels, maybe those days really did exist in
all
the
right.
days of Noah,
now, come on. Now
that there were giants on the land.
Now you're talking realism. There are so
many
cultures.
Well, this is all about curiosity.
Okay.
You
these things did happen. They did happen. But each culture from word of mouth, stories, scare little kids. I mean, you want your kids to do something good, then you scare them, and it's bad. But if you don't scare them, they're going to do the bad. That's it. I'm sorry.
Well, the whole story, the whole thing, the teaching, if you want to say, or lesson around Pandora's box or jar,
okay,
is that Zeus knew that Pandora's curiosity would mean that she could not stop herself from opening it, especially when she had been told not to do it.
Kind of like,
I love you.
Kind of like the snake in the Garden of Eden telling Eve to eat the fruit and she'd become a god.
And God said, don't eat the fruit.
Yeah. Well, that's probably why things...
Wait a minute. God said, don't eat the fruit. And the snake says, eat the fruit and you will become a god.
Yeah, well, he also probably told the giants, don't cut down the tree of life or otherwise you're going to get it. And
that's true. Okay, so if we were made in the image of God, hello?
Yeah, we're still...
Why would you have to eat the fruit to become a god?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
so
see...
I'm confused now.
Yep.
No,
see,
I'm not confused.
See, Frank...
I am a god.
Well, so...
I truly believe that each and every human being on this earth is God.
Watch out.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Don't get hit by a lightning bolt.
Each person has free will to do as they please. And I please to help my fellow man. And this other person pleases to become a dictator. I mean, duh. That's his choice. Not mine.
Well, when I say anything like, you know, me being created in God's image and talking about being creators, I'm not talking about like I can do what God does. I can take what God provided for me, like the clay, and I can mold a little bowl or a statue or something like that. I can form it, you know. I can create something with it on a tiny, tiny little fractionist scale. I can do something amazing because I've been gifted by what I believe my creator to do something, you know, productive or something nice or, you know, there's a video I seen a long time ago. I can't remember the name of the movie, but the lady
Watch
what?
You said a movie.
Yeah,
there was a movie.
Let me finish what I'm saying.
Okay, go ahead.
Life imitates art.
All right,
but nonetheless, the lady in the movie was the depiction of that was God. She was God. And when the guy asked the lady why we're here, and she simply said, to work. That's it. We're here to work. We're here to be caretakers and learn and do all this kind of, you know, good things for the world and each other. There's where our creativity comes in. There's where our little portion of the gift that I believe that God would have bestowed upon each of us, never given one of us all the gifts possible, giving us all just a little fraction of the puzzle, so that if we learned how to come together and work as one, we would get the big picture. You see what I'm saying? So I'm never trying to say at any point in time that we are gods. I'm saying that if we're made in the image of a god, looking the way that we do and being able to do the things that we do, that we were only a speck in the entire grand scheme of things, if you understand what I'm trying to say here.
No, I don't.
Well, let me see if I can... make it more...
I clarify?
Go ahead.
You said we were made in the image of God, and then you said we look like God. Now, wait a minute. Being in the image of God does not mean that you look like God.
I don't think we look like God either.
No, hell, heck no.
Oh, almost.
I don't want to get cut off. I didn't
almost.
Say hell.
You are gods indeed, as many passages show. God is a family.
Exactly.
Well, like I said, I'm just trying to figure it out, all right?
Okay.
And image to me, because of what I've been taught in my life, means you look like something. It's an image of something. It's
okay.
A mirror
right,
reflection.
Right. Now, that's my point, is this. An image of something does not mean that you look like it.
Well, I don't know, because I've never got to see God personally other than in a dream. All right? And so what I saw in the dream was maybe what the world had taught me that God might look like, you know. But nonetheless, what I saw of God and felt of God in my dream was of the purest love that I could. Yeah, I can't even explain it. There are no
words. Now you're getting there. Now you are getting there. Image of God. We
but
were
what
made
is, but,
in
but,
the image of God,
but I think
not
you have
a
to,
visual thing.
I think okay? you have to know what the image really means. It
right,
doesn't mean a visual.
Image.
Well, to me, it means, well, thinking about God or Creator, who is all, in my sense, is all loving, is compassionate, is kind, is, you know, righteous, I suppose you'd say, or just doing the creation from love. I mean, everything I feel the Creator created was from unconditional love. So we are part of that. We are loved unconditionally. So if we are in that image, maybe that means we are supposed to love unconditionally.
Yeah.
As well.
Oh, wait a minute.
And do good works and be compassionate.
You just described me as the devil.
Huh.
I did?
Yes, you did.
I didn't say that. That's if the shoe fits.
I am the devil.
Because you don't love conditionally? Unconditionally?
Right. Now you got it right. I do not love unconditionally.
Well, that's not true love then, is what I'm saying.
Oh, really?
You want to be in the image of God. You know, we have conditions. That's the problem. We have set up a whole bunch of conditions.
You said love unconditionally.
Now
all of a sudden you have conditions.
No, listen, I'm saying that's what we do. We set up conditions.
I love you.
I love you if you do this. I love you if you do that.
Oh, right.
Those
now,
are the conditions.
What do I need to do to get you to love me?
You don't do nothing. I just love you, man.
Okay, so if I do something bad, are you going to stop loving me?
No. I love you unconditionally. That's what unconditional means.
Okay.
That's it. That's what I feel is
so
the way...
So unconditional means there is no up and there is no down.
It's just love.
There is no black, there is no white.
I'm not saying that.
Unconditional means it does not exist.
Well, anyway...
No, I'm not saying that. That's
okay.
That's a whole other conversation.
We're talking about a creator that loved us so much, gave us everything that we see out here, and gave us the free will to do with pretty much as we choose without putting any conditions on us as to we have to do this or else. You understand what I'm saying? That
Yes, I do.
And so with that's what she's trying to explain to you. Love, unconditional love means you don't say, yeah, I got to do something, otherwise you got to do something or otherwise I'm not going to love you. Even if you're a jerk, we still love you. You see what I mean?
Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
You calling him a jerk?
No.
Wait a minute. I mean,
listen,
God
I could know you're a jerk, but I still love you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I love you too, darling.
Okay.
Look, wait. Bow down and worship me, or I will throw you into a lake of fire and you will burn forever. That is a condition.
Well, listen, we don't know what God has in mind, do we?
Oh, really? That's what's written down. But the thing is, it was not written down the first time.
Who wrote that?
It was changed by man. By men wanting to control men.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. There's a piece
right
there. All right.
Thank you, darling.
Got it right there. You see,
I
you have
do
to
love you.
Question authority.
Very much.
Feel the love coming.
I would love to hug you till your eyeballs pop out.
That I wouldn't like, but...
Yeah, don't pop her eyeballs out. What's wrong with you?
I know what you mean.
Say, we've been joined by Patty. How's it going, Patty? Are you there?
Yes, I am. What an interesting conversation this morning, guys.
My sister, love you.
I love all you guys. I got some basically really, really long arms, and I would love to hug every one of you. Your eyeballs pop out, and you start licking my face.
Yeah. By the way, listen.
Well, I've got something to throw into the mix here.
All right,
go ahead,
come on,
Patty.
Darling.
I've been listening, and it's really a good conversation this morning, but, as to what you guys were just talking about, and don't mind the wildlife in the background. don't worry about that.
We love those little critters.
But, when we're talking about the Creator, that it is the great I Am, right?
Yeah.
Which means that it is all encompassing. It's everywhere. It is everything. Without creation, there would be nothing that exists. So there's a book that tells stories about the Creator and gives these analogies and describes how people have experienced the Creator. But in all of this, the Bible is always used in interpretation, and I don't see the Creator as being ambiguous. I don't see the Creator as being guess about me, which one you think is right. The way I see it, the Creator is simply put everything. So it does not matter what your description of the Creator is. It only adds to the fullness of creation. The Creator can be any and all of the above, so to speak.
So we go back to what you started with, that I am.
Right.
Exactly. I am.
Well, either way, what we started off with on this show was some pretty profound extremes from both directions, such as, you know, when that what'd you call that Devil's Tower being possibly a tree stump, you know.
Yeah.
All right, well, when from coming from an educated background of I went to school and I learned everything that school had to teach me in science and all that kind of stuff, and looking at the facts presented to me, it honestly looks like a tree stump to me. Alright?
It does.
And if that's a tree stump, then that tree would have been 6 miles tall, and the dude that cut it down was a big dude.
Well, see, what it was probably you could grab that tree by the trunk, and then you'd have a ball on the end of a stick that you could slam the rest of the universe with.
Yeah. So, either way...
I remember when I was 10 years old, laying on the ground, flat on my back, looking up at the sky, and I saw a bunny rabbit.
Well, maybe I...
Wait a minute. It was a cloud.
Sure,
no
and
kidding.
I mentioned that earlier as well.
Really?
I mentioned that earlier as well, but listen.
Raymond,
listen.
Go ahead.
There was a man.
I saw a bunny rabbit.
Listen.
You wouldn't tell me it wasn't.
Listen, regardless of whether you think that's what it is or not, there was a man, literally, and it's a true story. There was a man who spent his lifetime learning about plants. I think they call that field botany. So he was a botanist. And so when he was on a tour of this particular mountain that we just talked about, and he was standing there, and from his educational background, looking at this mountain, he just blurted it right out. He said, that is not a mountain. That is a tree stump.
Right.
All right, well, now, you know, that's not finding shapes in the cloud. That's a man going from his education that, you know, if he would have said that around a bunch of scientists who were spewing out that this was a volcanic deal, they would all ostracize him, because no man of science is going to, you know, say these kind of blasphemies in the world of science, if you understand what I'm saying here.
I understand exactly what you're saying.
And, you know, I grew up where they had a gravel pit, right? And I would go out there and I would pick through. That was one of my favorite things to do, was to rock hound in the rocks that they pulled up and everything. And every once in a while you come across a rock that looks like a rock until you pick it up and you start looking at it. And then you see that it was actually a part of a tree. Yeah. I mean, we find petrified wood all the time.
Yeah, I got some here.
But you know, even a layman would know that, wow, that's a tree instead of a rock. That's a piece of petrified wood.
Wait, sweetheart, what is petrified wood? What is it?
It's crystallized.
Right. It's something that has been it's been in the water for a very, very long time usually, and soaks up moisture and just hardens, I guess. I'm not sure of the process. I just know that hold on, let me finish. That I used to find these. Now, knowing that if I paid attention, that I could figure out that this was a piece of petrified wood, like Shaziz was saying, a botanist could surely tell you whether a mountain was a rock or a tree, you know. Surely they could. Science should be settled enough to be able to do that, right? Right?
Well, maybe. But think about this. Petrified wood. Is it wood? Is it petrified? What does that term mean? It means
he got scared to death.
It means that elements. It means that elements have replaced its structure. It is stone.
I would bet you.
Wait a minute. It is stone that looks like wood because it has taken its place.
I would bet you any amount of money, because of the science knowledge that I have in my skull, that literally within our lifetime, we can make petrified wood. Want to take that bet?
I won't take that bet because I know you're right.
Well,
but
if you take
that bet,
if you take
you're wrong.
Anything as simple as salt, and you get the salt in a water solution, you get the salt to literally be a mixture of the water, kind of like seawater. And you soak.
It's a solution.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Either way, you soak a piece of wood or plant life or anything in that salt water, and then just leave it sitting in there and let all the water evaporate out. You measure the hardness of the plant before and after this entire process. You allow that water to completely evaporate out, leaving nothing but the plant life that has absorbed all this salt water solution, and you will note that wood will be hard. You see what I'm saying?
No, I don't.
It will absorb the salt. When you put water in salt in water, that's how they make crystals. They will sit there and get the water to absorb all the salt, mix it up really good, and then allow the water to evaporate. Which when it leaves behind, you will actually have little salt crystals that will form in the bottom of the jar. Well.
What?
Being that all, if you take a piece of petrified wood and you look under a magnifying glass at the petrified wood, you can see crystalline structures in the pores of the wood. And so, when you allow this to the water to completely absorb away or evaporate away, it will leave the crystalline structures inside the pores of whatever it is that you soak this in. And so,
and you're going to have crystal and salt, that's, not wood.
That's right, but the wood itself is still preserved in that structure. The salt merely filled in the pores of that structure, which is the same method by which all the other minerals, because you can do this with any mineral out there, even iron. You will find iron in petrified wood, because when the iron ore is in, you know, like what you see rust, it's fine shapes, and it finally floats down and kind of like lands in the grooves of the wood. And then over the years, it hardens up, basically like glues itself together, if you understand what I'm trying to say here.
No, I don't.
Well, it's the same thing you'll see in sedimentary rock. The heavies will fall to the bottom, and it will continue to layer the lighter materials on the top. And when the water finally goes away, you can cut a slab of that out. You can actually see layers of sediment, and they're different minerals depending on how heavy they are, but it, nonetheless, that rock has become solid just like concrete. You see what I mean?
Well, one thing that I see what you mean, but one thing I'm also thinking about is that all this petrified wood they find all over, you know, it means that once the earth was covered with salt water, ocean.
Well, either way, once again, now you get into, with all that water, for every square foot of water is so many pounds per square inch of pressure that is pushing down on that. And so if a piece of wood was underneath, let's say, 300 feet of water, at the bottom of that deal, there's a whole lot of pressure pushing down on that, just mashing it together. And if you take a look at how diamonds are actually formed with extreme heat and the materials of carbon pressing it down and making this crystalline structure when it's all said and done. So anything that would have been underwater would have been petrified by that entire process. But nonetheless, the wood's still there. It didn't rot away because it wasn't exposed to the direct atmosphere of, like when you put a piece of wood out in the rain and it gets wet and then it rots and then gets wet and then it rots and bugs eat it and all that kind of stuff, and eventually it turns into soil. So if it was under the water, like for example, if you go to places where they were doing logging, and there's actually companies out there that do this, they go to places that were doing logging, and there were certain big logs that for some reason got so wet that they sunk to the bottom. And this is like really expensive wood, because they'll go down there and they'll drag these old trees up out of the water, and they'll sell these old logs that they couldn't get to before because they were underwater. But that's really hard wood that had been underwater for all them years, and it didn't rot. You see what I mean?
Gotcha. I'm going to change the subject back to something.
All right.
What we were talking about before. Maybe this might shed some light, or maybe start another conversation. I don't know. But so in here, I'm reading, God is eternal spirit. Human beings are mortal flesh, albeit with a spiritual component. And the human spirit gives us understanding, if we pay attention. That the words, if we pay attention, are mine. Okay.
Thank you.
Well, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to pay attention to all the details.
Well, this is about the Psalm 82 that says we are made in the image. That's what we were talking about before. Just adding that to the fire.
Well, like I said, every bit of information that's in my head is no better than the information that's in your head. And every bit of stuff that I base all my decisions on, see, each and every one of us have been on a journey, and we've all gathered up all kinds of knowledge, and all the knowledge came from not just the mainstream media, but word of mouth or whatever. And so I'm sitting stepping back and I'm taking all this stuff in, and I'm trying to find some sort of logic and some sort of conclusion to what is the truth of everything. I couldn't tell you what's going on in Texas because I'm not standing in Texas. I could ask Raymond what's going on in Texas because he is standing in Texas. And if Raymond's honest with me, then everything, I get the good information. But if Raymond is dramatic and it says, oh, well, there's all kinds of ruckus going on over here, and then I tell somebody else, there's all kinds of ruckus going on in Texas. My friend Raymond told me, and why would he lie? You see the difference? That's what
I just feel that there's a great...
I live in Texas.
Well, I know you do.
Where is
problem
Devil's Rock, guys?
I live
in
Texas.
Wyoming.
Oh.
Wyoming.
Okay, well, either way, I'm just trying to get a grip on what's going on in this world out here. There's a lot of stuff that, makes you, scratch your head, a little question mark and light bulb goes off over the top of your head and say, hey, wait a second, maybe what we were told wasn't necessarily what was right. And so when I talk about my version of Christianity, what I believe it is to me is such as, there's a man that walked the earth and he said a lot of nice things and, according to the story, he sacrificed himself for others. You know, I believe in that kind of stuff. All right. Now, I'm not part of any kind of denomination where I got to say, well, this one's right and that one's wrong, or even the book itself is right or whether it's wrong. I'm telling you that the reason why I call myself a Christian is because there was a man that I inspire to be like because of the things that he said. Now, I don't know the history, folks. I wasn't there when it happened. And I base everything that I have as far as my spirituality on the faith of my beliefs that I have absorbed all this information going on around. And I'm seeing from what I see that there are ways that we can fix our world if we choose to do so, because we have that kind of free will to make that choice to do so. And when I look at the earth, if there was a 6 mile tall tree at one time and somebody cut it down, that's a shame, man, because I would have loved to see that tree.
Well, I've got a question too that I just thought of. I don't know if it has any relevance or anything, but if you have a 6 mile tree, that would dwarf the mountains.
Yeah.
So there would be no mountains. There would only be hills on the earth, right?
Yeah. But wouldn't that be amazing? And the oxygen that thing would have produced, I mean, it would have been, you're talking about clean, healthy air. When they talked about in biblical reference, when people lived to be 500 to 900 years old, that's amazing. You know, today it's unheard of. 60 to maybe 100 years and you're gone?
I don't think it's 100 years anymore, especially here in the U.S.
Well, that
I think it's like 70-something.
That's the difference from being back there with nature and living the way that we were actually probably meant to live as opposed to the way we live now. And if society's got so incredibly advanced that they become arrogant and believe themselves to be gods and made choices that would affect everyone regardless of whether everyone agreed or not, that's kind of where we stand right now. There are people out there making life and death choices for us that, we don't necessarily agree with. And if the people out there are doing things like what they call false flags and they're faking incidents in order to scare us into submission to walk through naked body scanners and stuff, I don't want to go to the airport and let everybody look at my junk. I mean, that's a private thing at home.
Wait a minute.
What?
I would like somebody to look at my junk.
Well, that's your preference, man.
You're right, because I know they're going to laugh themselves to death.
Well, either way, if you want to talk about freedom and you want to talk about truth, those two have to go hand in hand together. Because if we were, by our Creator, meant to be free, but meant to be responsible with that freedom and our free will, then that's the way we should be trying to, educate our youth of the day or whatever. If you ask anybody, I don't care who it is you ask about the state of the world, they're going to give you all kinds of crazy stories.
Right.
the world may be as bad as they say it is, and it may be that we're just kind of walking through life with blinders on and we don't see the reality. Maybe those giants are laying there right there in front of us, and the obvious elephant in the room is that at one point in history, this world was so incredibly beautiful, and we were so incredibly gifted, and then suddenly humanity, for greed and ego and power, basically just robbed and raped and looted and pillaged the land and each other. And here we stand today trying to figure out a way to find our way back to the Garden of Eden. You see what I mean?
We have a good point put in here by Ann on 2465 in the chat. It says, question, isn't the canopy of a tree usually indicative of a root system below ground? So would that not be a way to determine whether it was a rock or a tree?
Well, yeah. That'd be one way to go find out. Go down and dig at the base of one of those and see how far it goes down. You would literally find a root system for that tree. You know, it's not like we couldn't find out the truth if we wanted to. It's that, you know, if you take a look at a lot of the different things that the government has called protected, and like now these are protected lands, you can't go there and dig and see if there's roots under there. You'll get thrown in jail. And so if you try to go find the truth and start digging it up, then that's when the lawman rolls in and says, no, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. This is protected land. How are we ever going to find the truth? You see what I mean? It's like, I don't know.
Well, I feel that there's a great mystery. And I feel that the way we are, you know, like, you want to know more, I want to know more. There are some people who don't really care.
Yeah.
So that you're going to spend your life seeking to know the great mystery. I feel that it's called a great mystery because there are some things we may not know ever, or we may not meant to know the full mystery until it's some time, until we go to another place, then we may know. So, but I think it's important that we are seeking to know the great mystery, because the more we do know, the more we uncover, the more we know ourselves.
Yep. And because I love my Creator so much, I'm trying to find my way closer back. You know, I'm trying to find how to get close to my Creator, because this is amazing. If there's a divine Creator out there that had the knowledge and the ability to literally present us with this amazing gift that we call Earth, I want to sit next and listen to that man or woman.
Well, you are made in the image, but you are made in the image of Creator, so get to know yourself.
Well, I'm trying. I'm a trying.
That's what I say. It's a simple
thing. If you look at your writings in this past summer season, Shaziz, with Goliath.
Yeah.
And the lessons that you learned, the things that Goliath brought to you, to me, that's sitting with the Creator there.
Well, then you my know? Journey's getting close, and I'm loving every minute of it.
I agree on you. I agree with you there, Patty, and I think you want to take that and hold on to that a bit, not just jump into... Just don't, you know what I'm saying? So when people say something to us, it really, that's a truth you're speaking right now. And that it's a beautiful gift, you know, what you just said and what your experience has been, Shaziz. You know, I mean, I've had some of those experiences myself, and it brings tears to my eyes because I know that there's a little window there that I just was privileged to see something so sacred and profound.
I think there's not a day that goes by that I do not reference your writings on Goliath somewhere in my life. Seriously, Shaziz, that's how much your experience touched me.
Well, that's amazing, yeah. And it makes me feel wonderful because I wanted to share that. I still want to share that. I want to share that with as many people as possible because the feeling of becoming, I don't know how to say it other than the phrase becoming one with this world, to getting closer down to I'm finding these words really hard to say because I don't want
to... It's the closeness to unconditional love, to understanding your connection with life.
Yeah.
And life is the gift of Creator.
I don't want to try to make it sound like I feel like I'm special because I don't. I feel like I'm blessed and I'm happy. I'm thankful. And I give all the glory to my Creator for sharing that time with me. But I want to share that with the world because I'm being told that the world's in a bad state of affairs. You know, I'm being told that there's people out there that need stuff. And here I am. I have stuff. I want to share it. You know, I'm not a greedy man. If you could see inside my heart, you could tell I'm not a greedy man. And I got a huge loving heart that I believe that, you know, my God gave to me through my mother, you know, and I have such a profound respect for my mom because of all the trials and tribulations she went through in order to get me to where I am today. You know, and my own personal journey and struggles and then to be able to sit down and to write that story and to basically lay my soul out there to the world to share so that the other people of the world could see that there is hope left in this world. There is a purpose. It's not all a waste of time. And
you've proven that.
The harder I work on this land, the more this land blesses me. And I feel like that's something that people need to know. You know, if you got things going in your world that your environment around you, it's looking sickly, then get out there and do what you were meant to do and take care of it. It's that simple. When you stop using it, nature's going to take it back. But while you're using it, if you work in harmony with nature, nature will bless you so many times over that I'm telling you, you can't not be touched by the heart by doing this. You guys,
Go ahead.
You guys have experienced this in your life so many times. I'm sure of. I've heard stories from Patty. I've heard stories from Barbara, and I've even heard stories from Raymond. I know that you've been blessed by this stuff. I know that you've experienced this. I know it's in your heart because I believe it's within everyone's heart. It's just we got to step back and take a look at what we've been given and decide where we're going to go. It's as simple as that.
I agree. And I have another question from the chat in reference to Devil's Tower. This is from Anon, and he has they have a statement at first and then a question. Given enough time, trees turn into coal and coal turns into diamonds. Depends on the environment and the local substrate, I guess. But where you find diamonds, you find trees. And then his question is, isn't a diamond wedding ring just really ancient petrified wood?
Well, yeah, there's folks that actually find gems inside petrified wood. You know, if you think about the way that science explains of how carbon, which is coal, is compressed with heat and pressure and actually produces a diamond, the same thing scientifically could be done by minerals that are compressed under hundreds of feet of water. So, finding a diamond in a tree isn't going to be any different than finding a diamond next to a volcano or whatever.
I feel we are all diamonds in the rough.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, you know, I'm just not that much on a diamond as far as being the do-all, be-all. I'd like a pretty rock as much as I, you know.
Well, the thing that amazes me the most about rocks is what I said when I talked about that if you could just go back in time and see this world when it was very first created, before the years of layers of dirt and silt and corrosion, you know, took away the beauty. You know, it's kind of like not dusting your house for a month, you know, and you can't go in there and sweep off all the dust. But if you could polish that thing up to see how it was when it was very first created, the beauty of what we've been given, must have been so incredibly awe-inspiring that, man, how could you want to destroy anything? You see what I mean?
Well, arrogance steps in and wanting to be gods, you know, the false gods, and you know who that is. But I feel that we were originally gifted as the to be the stewards of this creation, of this sacred, you know, mother. So we are. That's our original, I guess you'd say, original part of Creator's law of one. That we were one with, that we still are, but we've separated ourselves. And, you know, if you don't take care of the sacred garden, it's going to die.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that us as a family, as a whole, as all of the humanity, all living beings on this planet, that we, over time, dropped the ball. We got lazy and allowed other people to make choices for us that they shouldn't have been making for us.
There you go. Now you're talking.
Well, one time years ago, I had found, guided to a teacher. Wallace Blackup was my teacher, and I was guided to that man and spent many years with him. And then something happened that pushed me out of that connectedness, and I went on a journey. I call it a spiritual journey because every journey I think we take there's a message there or an opportunity, and it's a spiritual connectedness, it's a spiritual awakening, or it's a piece of your spirituality, yourself as that, you know, being here on this earth on your journey of life. And so for years I took a journey, and it was a rough one. It was a challenge, a huge challenge in regards to my spiritual connectedness. And when I finally got back around through a dream, I was guided to reconnect with Wallace Black Elk. I said to him, well, I guess I got sidetracked. He said, oh no, you just went exploring, you know. So I think that we are on that journey of exploration, and we're going to come back around to the source. I think that's always going to be there for us. We're going to go on that journey. We're going to fall down. We're going to get bumped around and pummeled and fall down and pick ourselves up again. And I think that this is, you know, coming back around again is to know and recognize ourselves as the sacred children that we are, and that we do have a responsibility. We agreed to take the responsibility to be stewards of this sacred gift. And like you said, we got all pushed around and sidetracked.
Yeah.
And it's time now to come back to full back circle, you know, come back around. That's the key to me, is like what you get from the Mother Earth, from that Goliath and your land, and me too, that's the sacred gift. And you will find a healing so profound if you reconnect with this gift.
Oh, I agree. I felt it. I'm feeling it. And I'm out here, I'm trying to testify to my brothers and sisters around the globe. I'm trying to say, look, there is a better way. I've been there. You know, I've been down some hard roads in my life, and I've seen some terrible things, you know. And I know that this world is probably messed up. Otherwise, we wouldn't be in the shape we are. And we got to take care of this gift. I mean, even though I feel it's been neglected for, you know, so many hundreds, if not thousands of years because of the arrogance of man. You know, my buddy Steve, whenever he helped me put this website together, he put a phrase up there. He said, nature needs no improvement. Only the arrogance of man requires change. And I agree with that wholeheartedly. There's so much that we could do so much better. In the alternative energy world, I keep telling everybody, you know, it's nice we got air conditioning and heating and all that kind of stuff, the luxuries of life, but we could be doing it in such an easier, better, more efficient manner that would not only benefit mankind to still be able to enjoy those luxuries, but to protect the environment as well. Because if you abuse this land, then you're not going to be blessed by it. It turns into literally a wasteland. It's sad, because if you think about a 6 mile tall tree, how beautiful that must have been to stand underneath that tree and to look up and be so awe-inspired at the amazing beauty. It must have been some wonderful times. You know, I don't know, maybe if there were giants on the land, it wasn't such a pleasant time because a giant steps on you like a bug and you're through, but...
Oh, wait a minute. I like that.
I think that
when we say to people, go outside and you will be healed, go out to the nature, because Mother Nature is constantly giving. She's still giving, you know, yeah. even though she's been beaten up a lot, she's still giving. So it seems like a simple thing, and people will say, well, that's too simple. If I go out on nature, I'm going to be healed, you know, but that's the truth. It is a simple truth.
They go, Stephen Gibbons in the chat room yesterday, whenever I was doing the Mad Science Show, I had this cracking thing going on in my throat, and I couldn't hardly talk, and I couldn't hardly breathe, and he suggested I go get some honey, and I did, and I went and got some honey, and I did fine after that. But that was nature. That was nature's miracle of the honey that the bees had worked so hard for that literally made it so I could talk and breathe again. You know, that's just...
So you stole their life, right?
I didn't steal it. I bought it from the store.
Oh, really? and they didn't steal it?
Look, I'm just saying that all that's right. Just a time...
And you don't understand, if you don't understand... The gift that Great Spirit gave us in every part of nature is medicine. Everything we needed was right here.
Right.
We didn't need to make anything. We didn't need to create a pharmaceutical. We didn't need to make a better tomato.
Thank you, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That honey's just a tiny example of what nature has done to help us out, to keep us healthy. You know, we're the ones that made the nacho cheese and the Doritos and the Fritos and the greasy stuff. And
that's the only ones that are stealing stuff are the ones who are creating false things like, you know, Monsanto.
Yeah.
False seeds, imitation things. They are stealing from the mother.
Well, they are
stealing life.
You know, Monsanto was bought out by Bayer, right?
Who?
Monsanto was bought out by Bayer.
Yeah, now they're going to make your medicine, and they're going to make sure that you get your Roundup in your medicine.
In your vaccine.
Probably. Yeah, you got to keep an eye on when those companies change names. you got to keep an eye on when them companies change names. You know, a wolf named Fred is still a wolf.
Yeah, I like how they take these names, you know, how these, like the mother of all bombs, you know, how they steal the sacred and twist it into something dark and evil.
Can't have up without down.
But this, you know, this is what they do. Devil's Tower, Devil's Lake, you know, Devil's Cove, Devil's Kitchen. All that stuff.
You know the crazy thing about that name?
They take a beautiful, sacred thing and they put a name like that on it.
Really?
You know the crazy thing about that whole name of being the Devil's Tower? You know, it must have been the devil that cut the dang thing down, because I'd have been there saying, no, you don't need to cut that down. That's a beautiful tree. Leave it alone. You know, but I guess if the guy's that big to cut it down, I really ain't going to be able to, you know, put a whooping on him or anything like that. If you go out to
Wyoming, I've been to Mata Tapila, that sacred place. I've been there, traveled out there a couple times after ceremony, after Sundance. There's nothing like it. You come upon a ridge as you cross the border into Wyoming. You're traveling, and the road, it's pretty flat out there. You know, you can see quite far. You come over a ridge on the highway, and before you is this enormous structure. You think it's pretty enormous, but when you get closer and closer and closer to it, it becomes even more so. You don't have the perspective of it until you're standing beneath that tower.
Wow.
It is awesome. It is so... It sends shivers up you.
I'm going to have to make a journey.
You look all over the land. There's nothing like it. There's no other structure like it. It's just that one tower. That one sacred tree, if you call it a tree, which very likely it is.
I'm going to have to make a journey to go stand next to it, because I got to see for myself.
You know, I was born and raised in the South. And a rebel, I don't know. But I do remember growing up, and I do remember when I was 18 years old, I found out the truth that Yankees did not really have horns, long tails, and eat little kids for breakfast.
Does anybody remember the petrified forest or redwood trees and stuff like that? Those were some pretty amazing sized trees. But those would have been. Go ahead.
Okay, I just want to. Do you know that the movie, one of my favorite movies, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, was filmed at that tower?
Yeah, that's why I mentioned earlier.
Okay. The ships used to land there, and the old people, the elders, and the Indian people all around them talked about the ships used to land on top of that Mata Tapila, that Devil's Tower.
Well,
it's so awesome.
It's
so amazing.
It's amazing to me because there's some pictures that you can find out there on the internet where there's like 100 men standing on a doggone tree, and this tree is just gigantic. And so there were people back in like the early 1800s cutting down giant trees like that.
That's a heartbreak.
Yeah.
Heartbreaking. I don't know.
Yeah, they have pictures of them standing there like it's a trophy. Like, look what we did, you know.
Right. Thank you.
We brought down the oldest freaking tree. Yay, look at us. We're big bad boys.
And somebody even actually cut a tunnel through one of those trees.
Yeah, it's like we can't figure out how to put a road around these trees. You know? We have to go through them.
Well, we can't figure out just how to be grateful.
Hey, what happens when an immovable object stands in the path of an irresistible force? Come on.
Nothing.
Somebody knows the answer. An irresistible force is heading toward an immovable object. What is the solution?
Go around it.
Use.
That's one solution. Huh?
A huge explosion is going to occur.
No.
Well, if it's immovable and it's a big powerful force coming towards it, well, what's going to happen?
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be able to train it.
Okay, an immovable object is standing in the path of an irresistible force.
So what's the answer, man?
Who is it irresistible to?
Doesn't matter. Shaziz came up with the answer. Shaziz, do it again.
Go around
so
it.
The ladies can hear. What?
Go around it.
Okay. Around it, over it, under it, or through it. It doesn't matter.
That's too complex.
Can't go over it, can't go under it, can't go around it. Remember that as a kid?
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah. Why? I did not say it could not change direction. I simply said it was an irresistible force.
Well, nonetheless.
Logic. Hey, all rose bushes have thorns. This bush has thorns, therefore it is a rose bush, correct?
No.
Wait a minute.
Here's another story.
What happens when an irresistible force
is heading
toward an immovable object? I did not say it could not change direction.
Spit it out already.
Yeah, I left school a long time ago.
All right.
Hello?
The military comes out with their big bombs and they bomb it to submarines.
So, Barbara, you had a story?
I have a story. So, in Europe, in this little village, all the people there, the old people, and the whole town, know about the little people. They know the power of the little people, and they know that there are certain stones, and very interesting large stones, that are significant to the little people. So the town wants to put a road, or change the course of the road. In order to change the course of the road, they had to remove this huge boulder. Every time one of the big machines got near these big boulders, they died. The machines just died. They couldn't start them. They brought in new machines. The new machines died. So now this started to get people's attention. So people started bringing cameras in to check on this, you know, to photograph the machines dying and the people puzzled and all kinds of stuff, and the authorities trying to figure out what to do, because they had to remove this monolithic stone. And the townspeople, the old people, knew that the little people were, you know, that was a very special stone to them. And so the cameras would die when they tried to take pictures. Everything just stopped. So some of the people remembered, wait, our old citizens here, they know about the little people, and they respect and revere them, and they know these stones are very important to them. So they went to the old people, and the old people said, yeah, that's one of the special stones for the little people. You can't move that. They said, well, we have to move it because we got to change the road, the course of the road. They said, well, they're not going to be able to do it. They won't allow it. And so they said, well, is there something you can do? So they said, well, we could talk to the little people and we could find out. We'll give it our best. So they went in the way they do and sat out in the woods and talked to the little people. And the little people said, no, you can't move that stone. It's very sacred to us. But you can go around it. That'd be fine.
Okay, no joke.
And so that's what they had to do. They finally said, okay, we will go around the sacred stone. And that was the solution. Duh. But they
Maddie,
were all...
I love you.
No, I'm Barbara.
Barbara, okay.
Well, I know you love Patty, too.
Yeah, okay. I love both of you.
See, so you're not the only one who does that.
You don't beat your head against a stone wall.
Well,
you figure out
that,
the wall is there, duh,
but
over it, around
that,
it,
that,
under
yeah.
it, through it. It doesn't matter. What the point is, talk to somebody.
There's
find out what can we do. What
look,
can we do?
There's a hidden reason. There's a mystery here.
Yep.
And if you don't understand mystery, you're not going to get the answer. You're not
going
to get the solution.
Thank you.
So I'm just saying, that's a, you know, that's a beautiful story right there. It tells
yes,
you.
Yes, it is.
Yep. And
it is the solution to what happens when an irresistible force is heading toward an immovable object.
All right, well, now that we figured that all out, we got to go around it. But nonetheless, it's still, we started off the show talking about a little bit of both, of conspiracies and some mythology and what our reality really is or isn't. And I'm saying there's a whole lot more questions. The mystery hasn't necessarily been solved as far as I'm concerned, because I still got a lot of questions. There's things in this world that need to be resolved, and there's things in this world that we're told that are going on that may or may not be going on. There's things in the past that should have been said that ain't being said or taught or whatever. The fact that we're actually out here trying to sort our way through the truth, trying to actually, it's like finding a needle in a haystack when you're looking for the truth in this world, because we've been lied to a lot. And
yep.
that's a fact. And
yep.
there are conspiracies in the world. People have been conspiring forever and a day. And if our history says that there were giants on the land in those days, and there really were, I'd kind of like to know about it. I'd kind of like to know why it was that things ended up the way that they did. You know, there in the book that a lot of people despise, there was stories about a great biblical flood, but it wasn't just one book that said it. There were other people that from other cultures that talked about a big giant flood that pretty much wiped out the land. Now, if I were God and I told somebody, don't cut down that tree of life over there, and they cut it down, I'd be kind of upset. Maybe I'd cause the flood too. I don't know. I'm not God, so I couldn't know if I could make that decision. But nonetheless, we're still standing in something that is so amazing that if we ever decided to, as a family, to utilize the gifts that have been given to us, I think that we could work our way closer back to our Creator. I think that we could work our way back closer to nature. I honestly believe that hope is not dead, that there is a possibility that with all the wisdom that we've acquired through our lifetime, that if we make some good common sense choices and start working together with each other as opposed to arguing over the craziness that we do, we could do some amazing things. We've been given that gift to be able to do those amazing things. I talked about if I had a piece of clay that came from the earth, I could form this clay and I could make something really neat out of it. You know, an ashtray or a bowl or a cup or something like that. And, you know, I took what nature had provided and I used it and I made something that was useful to somebody, you know. That's all I've been saying all along. You know, we can work in harmony with nature. We can work our way back to a more peaceful, loving world. And I don't think that's too much to ask. We've spent a lot of time, a lot of years, a lot of decades fighting amongst each other. We've watched so many men, women, and children fall to so many terrible atrocities. And there's got to come a time when humanity's got to decide when is enough enough. When I look back and I think about the possibilities of what this world used to be as opposed to what I see now and hear about, my book said in the last day there would be wars and rumors of wars, plagues and famines and pestilence. And I don't want to see all that. You don't want to see all that. I got grandchildren. You got children. You got friends and family who have children. And I think that we owe them at least the opportunity to experience life, you know, to be able to share in the beauty that we've seen. So we've got to clean up the mess from the party that's been going on for thousands of years. And for a lot of folks, it hasn't been a party. For a lot of folks, it's been literally hell on earth. I think it's time for that to stop. I think it's time... Go ahead, Patty.
Well, I was just listening, and I think what the main issue, I think, is people have a perception of the Creator, the great mystery, as being something that is like an ethereal kind of a being or whatever. But I see creation as the Creator, as science. When you look at the earth, when you look at the way that it is designed, when you see the intricate nature of life and how exquisitely created it is, you cannot do anything but see brilliant science beyond our capability to grasp.
Yeah.
What we have are people who don't see the Creator as science or the science of creation as being valid, and it is the most valid of any sciences. There is nothing anywhere that can do anything near to what our creation has done.
Yeah.
You know, our Creator has done. And I think that it's that concept of people seeing the Creator is this guy sitting on a throne that just sits in judgment and things like this. They gloss over the fact of the sheer magnitude of science behind life. And so they sell it short and they think, well, I'm going to create science that'll be better, that'll improve, right?
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe.
Well, my buddy Steve, who just joined us in, he's over in the Philippines. Like I said, I'm going to repeat the phrase that he put at the top of this deal. He said, nature needs no improvement. Only the arrogance of man requires change. And if man thinks that they can literally do better than God as far as creating anything or creator, whatever, look. I could sit here and argue with the world about whether you believe there is or isn't a God. I'm just going to say what Patty just pretty much said, that if you can take a look at anything out there and you see the intricacy, the artisticness, the amazing machinery that is something as simple as a bumblebee, and you're not inspired by that, you're not impressed by that, and if you think you can improve on that, you got that arrogance. Because I don't see anybody being able to replicate the tree, you know?
Exactly.
How you doing, Steve?
Not too bad, to this. How you doing, Raymond? Barber Three Crow?
Hi, Steve.
Anybody else? Patty, yeah. How you doing?
It's good to have you, brother. Wonderful. You said you got some good news.
Yes. In the best tradition of mad science, you know that my kind of focus and direction is towards horticulture.
Yep. Uh-oh, did we lose him?
You're still there. 500 square meter organic research center, and have been given... guys, please bear with me. I'm like on Mars.
Well, just try to say it real fast before your signal goes out.
It is. I've designed a 500 square meter research center.
Cool.
That's been approved by the local city, and various groups are going to fund it.
So you're going to be able to show people how to do aquaponics and hydroponics?
64 square meter geodesic dome in the middle.
Cool.
With a double ring of aquaponic systems with shade, netting, the cast, everything. Now, she says, you know I identify as a Jedi.
Yeah.
You know, may the force be with you.
Are you going to be able to send us some pictures?
Ironically, I'm working in a Catholic convent.
Oh Lord.
I have designs, Shizzle. Go check out the plan that I sent.
Are you gonna be able to send us some pictures of your work?
Well, when I build it, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
We can't wait to see it, man.
But I sent you the design. There's 22 solar-powered lights on a really steep hill that leads down to the convent that were donated from the Mad Science Group.
Cool.
There's a bunch of young girls who are in the convent, and a couple of nuns, and a variety of other people that are in there out there all the time, but now no longer break their legs trying to get there. So they're very grateful to the Mad Science Group.
All right. That is great news.
Yes,
Steve. Steve.
Yeah, he answered you.
Okay. I've got your seeds.
Yeah, if you're going to use your webcam, though, put your pants on that. That dressing gown you have doesn't hide your junk.
Hey.
Sorry, Barbara. Sorry, Pat.
All right. I got the seeds. Now, how do I get them to you?
I'll send you my address.
Cool.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. So, folks, that's some good news coming from Steve in the Philippines. He got some in and out. Honest Abe's used ISP service. So.
Sorry about the poor connection, Jesus.
Oh, it's fine.
I just wanted to drop in and say things are going really well. There's a lot of people that are putting their hands in their pockets to help me as well.
We're always happy to hear from you, brother. I'm always right. Excited when you show up. So, anyway,
no
folks.
Joke. Why don't you come in more often?
What I've been trying to point out to everybody listening out there, you know, with everything that's going on in the news and alternative media, and even the past that may have been hidden, and, you know, we ain't necessarily been told the truth since the day we were born. I'm saying now's the time to maybe just kind of take a big step back and think about everything that you've been taught all your life and look at it and don't close your mind or your eyes to possibilities. I went on a journey here a little while back, and I wrote about this journey. I put it out there on Facebook. I told the world about a personal journey that I'd been on and my experience of becoming close with the world and nature, and about all the blessings that had come about because of that. And so I know that if a guy like me been down a road that I've been down can actually find some sort of profound understanding of life itself, that the world isn't without hope. We can, if we choose to do so, we can not only make our lives better, you know, we can get to know ourselves like Barbara mentioned earlier, and we can get to know each other. We can do things to this world, with this world, for one another. We can be good caretakers of this world. You know, the Knights of the Round Table is more than just an idea. It's something, it's a seed that we can plant. And all these podcasts, that if you go back and listen to all the things that were said on there, we were always talking back then about making the world a better place, and we're still talking about it now. Steve's over there in the Philippines, and he's actually doing what he can to make this world a better place. Raymond does his on his side of the world, and Barbara and Patty do theirs on their side of the world, and I'm doing mine on this side of the world. So there's at least five different places of the world that's getting polished up, if you understand what I'm trying to say here. It means that... Yeah.
Can I give you some more good news?
Yeah.
Recently there was a training session held at the convent by a local guy called Jim Esconde. He came up, he donated, I think it was about 60 styrofoam boxes to use organic nutrients to grow lettuce in styrofoam boxes. But it's not a chemical form of hydroponics, it's an organic variety. Today, a bunch of restaurants came up to the convent and are willing to buy all they can grow.
Wow.
So what that means is you're taking people that have volunteered their own money to train people with very little or no education. I saw a guy riding down the road the other day on a water buffalo with a saddle on it. You wouldn't believe what it's like here. But this is the way it works here. People with intelligence, intellect, that have retired, have money in their pocket, are going out to places and helping people that have very little education.
And see, those are the stories that need to come to the front. Those are the stories that the world needs to hear.
They call it a... I mean, it's a very positive thing, and I'm really glad to be part of it. The hydroponics was nothing to do with me, but I put them in contact with some of the restaurateurs that I know. So that's kind of my small little part of it. And, you know, there's going to be more people coming out. We're going to expand it to give people a livelihood.
And that's all
what it comes down to. We live in a commercial world. If you can't pay your bills, you don't have a quality of life. So we're doing our best to give people the skills so they can fit in with the structure of society that exists, rather than trying to change it, because I'm not that big a person.
Yeah, I don't think any of us are. But all we can do is our little part, you know. I said this a lot, so many times, probably wore it out, that, you know, it takes a lot of people to build a house. You know, you take a lot of people with skills, carpenters, plumbers, electricians, and you put them all together and you get this beautiful end result, which is a really nice looking house for somebody to live in. And I'm saying there's people like that all over this world. And there's people that aren't as fortunate as some in what they classify as first world countries or whatever. Or, you know, like where I'm living, I'm pretty much living in a castle compared to some individual that doesn't have the, you know, opportunity to, you know, be able to enjoy what I've got. You know, and I want them to have what I got. You know, if I could put a stamp on my house and mail it over to somebody who needed it more than I did, you know, I would do that. And it's not that hard a thing to want people to be able to live, you know, with the blessings that we've got. it's a harder thing to do, get up and actually make it so. And so for things like you do, Steve, where you're actually out there where the need is at and doing what it is that you're doing and helping people to help each other, that's what it's all about. That's what it's been all about.
Do you remember the artificial light systems that I was working with?
Yeah.
That's actively deployed in a farm, and it's producing between 550 to 1,000 seedlings a month.
Cool. That's amazing, man. That's amazing.
Think of it. One plant is 1 square meter. If you have large plants like tomatoes, cucumbers, pumpkins, that's 550 square meters in 1 month. And that's just one. It uses 500 watts an hour, 18 hours a day, 7 days a week, for 21 days, and then you can go and plant. Simple as that.
Well, see, not only did you get out there on shows prior and put the solutions on the table for everybody out there, you got out there and you actually enacted those solutions and benefited somebody else's life. And to me, that makes you my hero, man. Period. Because that's all we've been asking for people out there. That's all we've been asking for people listening in. We're not asking for donations for this radio show or this website or anything like that. We're just asking you to go out there. You know, the churches, they have this thing called tithing. You know, if I was to ever have my own personal church, I would tell people, don't bring your money here. You know, if you want to throw some paint on the wall and make the place look better, that's cool. But if you want to really tithe to the church, if you really want to take care of God's people, you go out there and you find the people in need and you do that for them. That's where it belongs. You see what I mean?
She says.
Yeah.
Somebody asked me, why are you here? And I said, well, that's an ecumenical question, really, isn't it? But besides that, I said, well, I just want to grow more food than I can eat. Simple. Because if I can't eat it all, somebody else is going to eat it.
Yep.
Well, I make it more complicated than that. If you set with simple goals, then you can only get better.
Well, that has a special place in my heart because of my upbringing, the way that I was raised. I wasn't raised in a wealthy family. I was kind of on the poor side of life, if you understand what I'm saying. But I have a profound respect for those who feed people, for those who take care of people, and I know what it's like to literally go without food. I've done it. I've been there before, and it's not a pleasant thing.
Well, it is.
Yeah.
Can I give a quick shout out to Raymond?
Yeah.
Raymond very kindly ordered me some seeds I can't get here. Organic varieties that are USDA organic certified.
Yes.
So Raymond is part of the deal as well.
Well, I mean, and I got that respect for him too.
Not trying to help.
I want to get these seeds to you. They are exactly what you said you wanted. I got them. I paid for them. They're here. I just need to get them to you. How do I do that?
Well, he said he's going to send you the address. All right.
Look. I already sent you my address, Raymond.
So, basically, you know, something simple in life. The simple is everybody needs food. You know, there's people out there that are in need, and there's people that are willing to take care of them. There's people that are out there taking care of them. We're just hoping that maybe we can inspire people with these stories that we shared on here of how things actually worked out for, like, Steve in the Philippines and all the people he's helped, and Raymond helping to send them seeds that they needed, and all the different the good stories you never hear about. The stories that the mainstream media don't tell you about. You know, I always want to tell you about all the bad things going on in the world. What about the good things? What about the people out there that are constantly reaching into their own pockets or their own cupboards, and they're all out there rushing out to help people in storm areas? These people do exist. They're really out there. And they need to be recognized. Somebody needs to tell these stories. That's what the Knights of the Round Table is about. It's not just about telling you there's a problem. It's about people going out there making the problem go away, fixing the problem. At least, at the very least, making each other's lives just a little bit better on a daily basis. That little positive pebble in the pond that I keep talking about.
A little bit better.
Yep. My days have been better. You guys joined me here on the show today. So I've been blessed today just because you guys showed up and shared some of your words of wisdom. You know, those things that I don't think about that Barbara will tell me, or Patty will tell me, or Raymond, or Stephen, and even Stephen Gibbs in the chat room. And it's just, every day is a blessing that we get to do these shows. Every day that we get to talk to people and give them ideas that, you know, about stepping back and looking at the big picture and seeing that, you know, things aren't always as bad as they appear. Things aren't always as they appear. Sometimes there's a hidden mystery behind it. I guess that's what makes life exciting. But nonetheless, if we want what we've all been talking about forever and a day, you know, for people to be able to live, everyone to be able to enjoy in all this. This is ours. It's not mine. It's ours. It belongs to everyone on this planet. Shaziz Radio, it belongs to you. It belongs to all of you. And if you want this radio show to keep on going, all you gotta do is show up and say hi. Jump on the microphone, share your story, share your blessings, and help somebody in this world out. That's all it's about. And I do my little part. It's a tiny part, but I love doing it because I'm blessed every single time I get to talk to these wonderful souls. These people that have been journeys that they could tell you story after story of amazing things that they've seen, miracles and trials and tribulations. Those stories are just as important as mine. They're just as important as yours. And it's got to inspire you to empower each other to literally try to work our way back to what this world used to be. I would love to seen a 6 mile tall tree. That would have been so amazing. I would have loved to seen
you. Yeah, but she is.
Yeah?
Can you imagine the dog that's going to cock his leg up against it?
I wouldn't want to be around that dog. Anyway, that's a big dog. You know, some people are afraid of the little tiny dogs because they got big spirits and they want to bite your ankles. But I don't know, a giant dog's kind of concerning to me. Well, folks, this has once again been another amazing show. And like I told you, it was going to be a wild one because we started off on two separate extremes. There's a lot of questions that need to be answered. There's a lot of things out there that are going on, that are said that are going on, that need to be resolved. But I'm telling you that if we decide to, we can fix it. That all hope is not lost. Until at least this crew right here gives up and walks away, it's not over. And if we decide, if we can get all these people in the world that listen to these radio shows to actually come to the front, and we decide we want to work together, we can get things done. We do get things done on a small scale, but it's kind of like if you only got the plumber trying to build the entire house, and that's it. You got nice plumbing, but the rest of it's going to be kind of crooked. You know, I'm not good with the tape measure, you know, as far as getting it exact. So if I build a house, it's going to lean to one side. But if I got Raymond's skills with mine and Stevens and whatever, all of these wonderful individuals, we can build that beautiful house. We can take this world to what it was. We can take it back to what it was. We can plant the seeds for the future 6 mile tall tree. And then maybe someday somebody get to see it.
See.
So this is the time we gotta go around the corner here. That on the table. What?
Steve?
I'm here.
Okay, good deal. When this show is over, I'm going to give you my email address so that you can send me your physical address so that I can send you these seeds.
I'll put it onto Skype.
When the show's over.
The show's trying to get over, but you guys, look, it's time to go around the table. And where I come from, ladies go first. So which one of you ladies want to go first?
Go ahead, sis.
You got to unmute your microphone.
Are we talking?
Yeah, it's time to go around the table. You're first. Got any words of wisdom?
I had some. I keep coming up with words of wisdom that I've heard from you guys. The secret is a positive pebbles, like you always say. That's what comes down to. I can just put your mind and everything that you do in a positive manner has a positive effect. So if we all create one thing in our lives that is positive for life, not just our life, but for life, then we have all done a great thing. Like you say, Shaziz, it's that positive pebble. If I throw it out there, everything that I bring that's positive will radiate out. It will not only improve my life, but it will improve every life. And I'm not talking about people in only. I'm talking about life as we know it. And a lot of times, we don't even think about the life that we tamper with, that we be in our everyday lives have no conscience of when we go out and we mow our grass, we go out and we eat their tree down because we want to put something here or there. We dam up a waterway because we think that we'd like to have a pond here or whatever.
Yeah.
We do so many things without thought of how it affects life. More conscious of the way we things and what we want. I have a fixed system. A fixed system was that for all life without dream, without any extra, without any money, worked perfectly for every living thing. Well, why can't we see that science of nature is worth more than any of our actions, any of our attempts to bet? I think we can bet it be us, I think.
Yeah.
And that positive temple that you bring to the point that where we need to be. Thanks.
Yeah, your message really cut out really bad there, Patty. But I understand exactly what you're saying. I mean, just like nature needs no improvement, we just need to learn how to work beside it and really be, you know, meticulous and responsible about the way that we do things. I agree with you. So what about you, Barbara?
Oh, thank you so much. You guys, I always love being here with you. You know, you get me really thinking and I have to go deeper and step back and look at all the big picture. and it's just amazing mystery, the great mysterious. I just want to say that, you know, all the people, every human being on this earth is so essential, so significant. We are all unique in our own way, but we are all really so much alike. And, you know, I always say, get your spiritual garden in place. You know, get right with your creator. You know, meaning connect with what the spirit is within you, that sacred self that you really truly are. And I suppose if we really truly think and believe that we are made in the image of the creator, how would we treat ourselves? And how would we treat each other? And if we believe that this is paradise or was once paradise, I do believe it is still this Mother Earth, and that it was created from joy and love, unconditional love, as a gift to us, a gift to all humanity, how would we treat this Mother then? How would we treat the waters and the creatures and all of this creation? So I just say, you know, don't think that you're insignificant and don't think that you're unimportant. And, you know, yes, and as Ziz is always saying, just join us and we'd love to have you. And we're talking to all you, our brothers and our sisters. And every one of us is an important part of this great, great sacred web. And I just want to say that and much gratitude and Hilamaya Dokcha.
Yeah, 2 points on what you was talking about. I posted that picture again in there about our uniqueness and individuality. Each one of y'all is those missing pieces of the puzzle we keep talking about that can throw your positive pebble in the pond. And as we look around this world and see, we can still see beauty on this world. I mean, it's still so incredibly beautiful. I can only imagine what it was like when it was first given to us. As a family, it would have been so amazing beyond all words that you would be somebody would put something together so spectacular and beautiful, and then hand it over to, you know, we the people as the human race or whatever to be the caretakers of. To me, that is, you know, if somebody gives me something, I want to cherish it. I want to respect it. I want to be thankful for it. I want to feel blessed by it, and I want to share it with others. And that's what I feel like has been our blessing, was that we were given this. And some of us have come to the understanding that, you know, things, you know, they're not as they should be. And we're trying to help, you know, be like that lighthouse we keep talking about, people can come to when they need some help, you know, and we can all work together and try to figure out ways through things. Stephen does that and Raymond does it. We all do that. Every one of us on this panel go out there in our own ways and do what we can for other people in the world, and we're just trying to inspire other people to join us in that effort. You know, I keep talking about the dream. I still believe in the dream. I literally believe that if we chose to do so, we could bring about heaven on earth. Maybe we're actually standing in it already and just don't recognize it. And maybe there's been a lot of terrible things that mankind had made bad choices and destroyed, and what would have otherwise been so much more beautiful than what it is right now. But I can still see this beauty. I can still step back and see what our Creator gave to us. And I'm like so amazed, and I just believe so wholeheartedly with everything, every ounce of my soul, I believe that if we honestly decide that we want to truly live in peace and love, that we can make it happen. We can make it so. You know, people out there, they saw a need. They went out, they addressed that need, and they made somebody's life better, and that's all we've been talking about. That's all we've been asking anybody for. We've been saying, share these messages with other people out there to let them know that there's still hope alive in the world and we still have solutions. We got so much. There's so much knowledge. My friend Steve's always telling me that we have the vast sum of all man's knowledge at our fingertips. And with that knowledge, we can do all the alternative energy things we talk about on the Mad Science Show. It's been proven it can be done, and we can do it in perfect harmony with nature. We can feed the hungry. We can do this thing. I ain't heard from him for a long time, but my friend Delvin, he coined the phrase guerrilla charity, where, you know, if the lawman's going to throw you in jail for trying to feed the homeless, then get you a Batman suit and run by and hand them a sandwich and run off, you know. Just make it happen. Don't sit around and wait for permission. You were given permission by the Creator to be a good caretaker of each other. That's all we've ever asked of anybody. That's all our Creator ever asked of us, is to take what gift we've been given and share it, to do what's right. And I think that's why we do what we do. That's why the round table exists. Send these podcasts out to friends that you see are in despair and thinking they need some help or whatever. Bring them to the table. Bring a friend to the chat room. Share their ideas and their trials and tribulations and journey with everybody else as well. That's all we want. We're not asking for fame or fortune or money or anything like that. We're just asking for people to, you know, help each other out, to help us fulfill a dream of making this world a better place, one positive pebble at a time. It didn't get this messy overnight, and it ain't going to get fixed overnight. But if we decide we want to, we can move forward. And the more people we can bring to the table, the faster we can get it done. So with that said, Stephen, you got the worst internet connection. You want to go next? You still there, brother? Or did we lose you? I think we lost Stephen, Raymond.
Yeah. I think so.
Well, you got any words of wisdom? He's back.
No. Oh, I'm still there, Shiz.
Yeah. You got any words of wisdom, brother?
Two things, Shiz. There's a quote here: grow more food than you can eat and live a life less ordinary.
That's a really good words of wisdom.
Steve.
Simple man.
Steve.
Yes, mate.
Okay. When this program is over, do not hang up. That's my words of wisdom.
All right, well, we got somebody that's getting some things resolved, and you've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table, another wonderful, blessed show as far as I'm concerned. I'm thankful for my Creator, and I'm thankful for all these people on this panel and the people that show up in the chat room, and I'm thankful for all the people who decide to share anything with anybody that's positive. I'm thankful for anybody who shares our podcast. I'm thankful for anybody who brings anybody to the table. I'm thankful for everything that is good in this world, and I'm thankful for all the people that make it so. You have...
Ma'am, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh! How'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up, will you? Shut up!
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Do you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot!
We're knights of the round table, we dance when we're able. We do routines to call the scenes, to bookwork impeccable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and scram a lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-table. So many times we give and rhymes that are quite unsingable. We're off to mad in Camelot, we sing from the dire Camelot. No, we're tough and able, quite indefatigable.
I have to push the pram a lot.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Terrible, and the Knights of the Round Table.